Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories of a beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows with the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later on. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for Triple Play Thursday. All right. Hey, coming up on the show, one of my favorite people on the planet. Always, always love to have him on. Rich Coase, also known as Sven Gulli. Our good buddy Sven Gulli is going to be on the show. He is celebrating 40 years of being Sven Gulli. This year marks the 40th anniversary of Rich playing the character of Sven Gulli. And we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the May schedule for the Sven Gulli show. He's doing a month of Frankenstein movies. Oh, and it's going to be so good. So we're going to have Rich on to talk about that and much more. Good friend Rich Coase, Sven Gulli. Check out svengulli.com for more information. We'll get Rich on. He's just the best. So we'll talk to him in a little bit. Hey, today is the anniversary of the first sighting of the Loch Ness Monster. So, you know, my producer, Tyke, nice going, Vic. That was a nice... Did we just terrify you, Vic? Is that what happened at the mention of the Loch Ness Monster?
Don't get me started on the Loch Ness
Monster. Oh, wait a minute. Wait, why?
No. You go ahead.
All right. Okay. Well, when we talk about it, if you've got some Loch Ness Monster stuff, we want to hear it, because I know that Tom does, because Tom's Scottish and spent some time living in Scotland.
Yep.
So I want to get that point of view as well. But the Loch Ness Monster, first year it was sighted. Can you guess what year? You already know, Tom. Vic, what year do you think was the first time on May 2nd?
Man.
May 2nd.
Let's go 50s, 60s?
33.
Wow.
1933. May 2nd, 1933 was the first time that the Loch Ness Monster was sighted. So we're going to talk about that. And that's going to lead us into the topic of the best monster movies of all time. Because I love monster movies. And we are just less than a month away from Godzilla, King of All Monsters. King of Monsters. And it's going to be the greatest movie ever made. I'm just saying that right now. The greatest movie ever made. And then also we got some really surprising and pretty crazy celebrity feuds that we are going to talk about. So that's all coming up on the show. You can call us anytime you want. Talk and text at 312-981-7200. And for your Triple Play Thursday request, one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And stay connected on our Facebook page. It's updated during the show. It's interactive. And it's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us right now, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Let me say hello to my aforementioned producer, Tom Hush. How are you, Tom?
I'm feeling good. How are you?
All right. I'm good. I want to hear some from that side of the pond about what they think about Nessie.
Yeah, there's some thoughts.
Yeah, I bet. And then monster movies. That's always a fun topic. We'll get into that, too. And in the Vic, room. Yes.
Now it's let's call it that.
In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you, man?
Doing very well, sir.
Good, good, good. What you didn't see that we were talking off the air. You did not see the Cub game this evening.
No.
Oh, man.
11-0. Missed it.
It was a heck of a second inning.
You know, what I was doing earlier today was watching the bar testimony. So,
well, senior,
looks like I missed out on, on that decision. Yeah. So I stayed up late for that.
You stayed up late to watch that.
I didn't wake up until around 9 o'clock.
Yeah, and well, you're a newsman.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in the Vic room, so you have to
I've got to change these decals on the windows.
Yeah, you might want to. It's the Northwestern
they
Medicine.
They misspelled Vic. It says
Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to get into all that. We want to hear from you guys. Favorite monster movies, any Loch Ness stories, great celebrity feuds, and so much more. Yeah. So 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 is the... is the phone number for Talk and Text and your Triple Play Thursday requests. You know, that Fosse and Verdon, I watched the latest episode yesterday morning. And that show is just so great. The acting in that show is absolutely stellar. Sam Rockwell is great. And Michelle Williams is like a revelation as Gwen Verdon. And this past episode was... mostly concentrating on the debauchery of Bob Fosse's life, especially it covered the year of 1973 when Bob Fosse won an Academy Award, 2 Tonys and 3 Emmys in the same year, and yet his life was crashing down around him. And it showcased that in a pretty spectacular fashion, and again the acting is so good. There was a beautiful, really beautiful music number at the end of the near the end of the show that was just really great. Tom, are you caught up on Fosse Verdon? Are you watching Fosse Verdon?
I am watching it. I am a couple episodes behind.
Okay,
because I'm also balancing that with watching What We Do in the Shadows,
another FX, great FX show,
and staying up to date on Barry, Game of Thrones,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, there's a lot to watch. I don't watch the Game of Thrones, and again, I can't emphasize how spectacular the last episode of Barry was. I've seen it 5 times. I've watched it 5 times.
Yeah,
I just that was one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen, and that little girl, man, I don't even know what to say.
Whoever would have thought that a hitman comedy starring Bill Hader would pretty much overshadow Game of Thrones in terms of quality?
Yeah,
especially because last week people were pretty upset about the way that that Game of Thrones episode was shot.
Yeah, because it was dark and all that stuff. But no, I mean, and Hader directed the episode, made a massive statement as a director. With that last episode, it was just great. But lots of good TV out there. I'm going to watch What We Do in the Shadows when I get home this morning. So good stuff. All right, let's take a break. Speaking of good stuff, my main man Rich Coe's Sven Gulli is going to be on with us right after we take this break on WGN.
Calling all stations, clear the air lanes, clear all air lanes for the big broadcast.
That is music that I hear every Saturday at 7 p.m. That's what's that's coming out of my TV every Saturday at 7 p.m. when I watch Sven Gulli. And it's a milestone year for Rich Coe's as Sven Gulli. It's the 40th year he's been playing Sven Gulli, if you can believe that, 40 years. And so we wanted to get Rich on to talk about that. But not only that... he's got a special programming stuff going on in May. It's Frankenstein month. May is Frankenstein month, and so we want to get into talk to that. And basically, any excuse to get Rich on is a great excuse because he's the best. Rich Coe's, aka Sven Gulli, good friend of the show, and we want to welcome him back. Rich, how are you?
I'm good. Do you really need an excuse to have me come on?
No, I want you to come on. If I could have you on every night, I would, Rich.
Yeah, at this point, I don't think we need any excuses. All you got to do is just let me know you want me to come on.
Well, I appreciate that, man. You know how much I admire you.
So, well, you're very nice. I appreciate that.
Well, it's great to talk to you, Rich. I know that we always see each other at least once a year at the Flashback Horror Convention.
Yeah, definitely so. And this year, I think we're going to be doing a couple of things special, aren't we?
Yes, we are. There's going to be, you know, Mike and I were talking, Mike Mia and I were talking about it. Mike and Mia Kurz, who run Flashback Horror Convention, said that we have to do a big celebration for your 40th anniversary. And we're going to do that the first night. We're going to do that Friday, and then you'll be there Saturday, as you always are, signing autographs and taking pictures, and then, of course, hosting the fantastic costume contest. So, but we got something special. We're going to have some stuff that really special stuff happening for Friday night to celebrate your 40th, Rich.
Yeah, it should be great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's always a good time. Flashback is always a good time. And I've said this before. My, you know, it's always an honor to introduce you before the costume contest, but that's my favorite. That's the highlight of the weekend for me every year.
Why is that?
Because it's so funny, and the costumes are so weird, and some of the people are nuts, and just you dealing with them and making the comments and making references that some people don't get in the room, which is always one of my favorite things, Rich.
But the good thing is, I think you get every single one of them.
Every one of them. It's funny, because I introduce you, and then I just get off the stage and sit right down in the front row. it's seriously the highlight of the weekend for me, so there you go.
And it always is a lot of fun. I mean, and like you said, the costumes go from really incredible to real head-scratchers at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you never know what's going to happen at that thing, so it's always a riot.
It's funny. I always like it when you get multiple Jasons who won't talk to you.
Yes, that seems to be very popular. And, you know, it's like trying to put variations on my reactions to that is certainly a limiting sort of thing.
Yeah, I just remember last year, there's this kid that he's in the children's section of the costume contest. The last year, he came as the thing with two heads. He had a Rosie Greer. On his neck. He had a neck brace on with Rosie Greer. With Rosie Greer, so he was the thing with two heads. And the year before, he came as Roddy Piper from They Live.
That's right, yes.
And that kid is, I don't know, his father just dresses the kid. I don't think the kid knows anything about what he's dressed up as, but the father, father just dresses him up, and every year, I'm always curious to see what that kid's going to look like this year, too.
Well, his dad is an artist, so I think he, you know, puts a lot of effort into what he's going to have the young man be.
Yeah, well, it always turns out really great, and those costume contests are fun. And we got a really great lineup for Flashback this year. Bruce Campbell is back after, I think, 13 years of not being at the fest.
I have never met him, and I'm hoping that I get the chance.
Oh, man, he's great, Rich. He's just great. And,
I know.
And but a big coup, we got Sam Raimi.
Yeah, I saw that, and his brother Ted was there previously.
Yeah, Ted was there, but we've never had Sam Raimi, and I don't think he's done a lot of conventions, you know. I'm really excited. I interviewed him years ago when Darkman came out.
Oh, right.
So that was a long time ago, but I'm really excited to have that. And we've got Robert Englund is going to be there. He's a perennial.
Always great to see him. And Amanda Wiss.
Right, Amanda Wiss. A lot of people from the Nightmare movies. There's going to be a reunion for Night of the Creeps.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And then Tony Todd, Candyman, Virginia Madsen from Candyman, is going to be there. So another great and a stellar lineup. And I know a lot of the activities are going to be fun, including celebrating your 40th. So that's going to be a good time in August.
Yeah, it seems like it's so far away now, but yeah. I know it's going to be no time at all, and we'll be there.
And, of course, we'll get you on right before that so we can talk about it. But, all right, let's talk about 40 years. When is the exact date?
I think it's about June 17th, maybe.
Okay, so June 17th will be the 40th anniversary, official 40. But you've been playing this character now for 40 years, and I know maybe people know the story already, but tell us how it started. You started as son of Svengoolie.
Yeah, exactly, and that all came about because the original Svengoolie, Jerry G. Bishop, at one point, while he was still in town, was approached by somebody from a local station who said, "Do you want to just do Svengoolie like as a summer sort of, you know, summer filler type thing?" And, you know, just a limited kind of thing. And Jerry said, "Well, I don't really know if I want to do it." But he turned to me and said, "But you could do it. You could be son of Svengoolie, and, you know, and I'll produce it." I mean, he had the confidence in me to do this.
Yeah.
And I know I've told the story a lot, so I'll make it really brief. Nothing ever came of that. We had some false starts on it. When Jerry headed off to San Diego, he told me, you know, I give you permission to, if you want to do the Son of Sven Gulli thing. I shopped it around various places, and eventually I landed at WFLD.
Right.
And I was the Son of Sven Gulli, and we ran with it.
Yeah, and you started that in 1979. Well, first of all, you know, you can tell the story too about how you became friends with Jerry.
Oh yeah, I was just a fan of his. He was on both radio and TV at the time. He was doing mornings on WCFL. And his sense of humor really jived with mine, so I really enjoyed his show. And he also was working at WFLD, Channel 32 at the time. And he just happened to be the guy who was the... that was when they had live staff announcers at
right.
TV stations.
Right.
He was the guy on duty on Friday nights when they would run these horror movies. And he started to fool around, do the accented voice... and created the character just as voiceover originally.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, he would read things that people had sent to him, so I started sending him jokes and things like that.
Yeah.
He liked the stuff I sent him. He'd start to request specific things like, could you do a parody of this, this commercial, or, you know, I need a song parody for this or that. And that eventually ended up working with him at WFLD, and then later on when he went to WMAQ Radio, I worked with him there.
Yeah, and I kind of equate the relationship that you had with Jerry in the same kind of way that I had a mentor relationship with Roy Leonard. And you know what I mean? It feels like that. Like, you started out as a fan, and then, you know, well, for some reason, Roy took a liking to me, and I still have no idea why. and I got to work with him, and he became a mentor, and that's pretty much responsible for my career.
Yeah, and then you're right. It's the same thing, really, because, Jerry was, just like Roy, very generous
yeah.
about, you know, helping me out.
Yeah.
And, he could have just, you know, taken the material I wrote for him and said, hey, thanks a lot, kid, and he
yeah.
never done anything.
Yeah.
But he got me involved in the TV show when he went to WMAQ Radio. He took me along as producer, and actually it turned out like sidekick because, you know, like 80% of the people he'd talk to on the phone were me doing different characters. And, again, you know, just the fact that when he left town, he said, you know, I give you permission to do the Son of Sven Gulli thing.
Yeah.
You know, and never asked for anything back.
That's, yeah.
And, I do know, and I'm very flattered that he was very proud of what I did with the character and the fact that I was very successful with it.
Yeah. And your Sven Gulli is a lot different than Jerry's Sven Gulli.
Yeah, well, I think it's amplification of both of our personalities. Jerry's was kind of, you know, this sort of hippie vampire.
Right.
With, as he put it, a sort of Transylvania Yiddish accent.
Yeah.
And then when I started, I did have the accent, and he always said mine was kind of Transylvanian Lawrence Welk, which I still think is pretty cool. But eventually, as we went along, people ask now, you know, you don't do the accent that much anymore, and it's true. The reason for that is that they would have me reading a lot of information in a very short period of time.
Right.
I had to read it real fast, and the accent started to get in the way of people understanding it. So I started to kind of, you know, lessen it a little more and a little more as we went along, and
yeah.
Now the excuse I use is, well, you know, I've been in this country long enough that I lost the accent.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. Now, there was a period of time when you weren't doing Sven Gulli.
Yeah.
But you had like the Code Zone when you were on FLD with the Code Zone and things like that.
Right.
And then when did Sven Gulli come back as Sven Gulli, not Son?
That was in 1995, right about January 1st of 1995, when Neil Saban, who created MeTV and turned WCIU into the U,
yeah.
Hired me. I think I was his first talent hire, in fact. And he had said, you know, would you mind doing the Sven Gulli character again? And as I've said probably many times before, there was never a week of my life during the time when I was not doing the program on a regular basis that somebody didn't recognize me and say, hey, are you ever going to do that again? Because I really liked it.
Yeah.
And the fact that it meant so much to so many people was definitely why I said, yeah, sure, I'll be glad to do it. See, during the time, even when I wasn't on air, I was still doing appearances as the character. Sure. I'd do stuff on various radio and TV shows and, you know, public appearances. So I was still Sven during that time.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, I can't believe it's been 40 years, and I've been on board all 40 years, Rich.
So maybe you should get some sort of gold watch or gold rubber chicken or something.
I don't know. I still got my 3D glasses from the Revenge of the Creature. I still got them.
That's good enough. Yeah.
All right, Rich, hang on. Okay.
Okay.
All right, great. Rich Coase, the great Rich Coase, is with us. Sven Gulli. Better known as, you can check out SvenGulli.com. Celebrating 40 years as America's favorite horror host. We got more to talk about with Rich and some really great programming coming up for the month of May on Sven Gulli, which you can see on MeTV, 7 p.m. every Saturday night. Okay, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up, then right after that, more with Rich and Sven Gulli right after this.
Take a quick look and you can see this town is just like Mayberry. Our hero has to jump when he meets Helen Crump. The old guy who first found the slop is Emmett from the fix-it shop. If this kid wasn't such a dope, he'd be a lot like Ope.
Right.
Can you tell me?
The great Sven Gulli and Doug performing a parody of the Andy Griffith Show from for the movie The Blob, which was on last week, which was shown last Saturday night on MeTV on the Sven Gulli Show. And that's who we're talking to. We're talking to Sven Gulli, Rich Coase. Coming up, we're going to talk about the best movie monsters and some great celebrity feuds. That's all coming up and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Triple Play Thursday, get your requests in. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. That's all coming up on the show. But let's get back to our conversation with Sven Gulli, a.k.a. Rich Coase. Rich, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to still be here.
Good. You know, it's every time I see The Blob, I always forget just how goofy that movie is. But I love the theme song, and you talked about that about the theme song itself for the opening credits. It's just so weird that that's how the movie opens.
Yeah, especially because it seems like it's such a cheerful, fun song.
Yeah.
You know, for something that's supposed to be so horrendous and is killing people. And by the way, for the people in the Chicago area, we rerun that this Saturday morning at 11 a.m. on WCIU, just in case they want to catch that.
Right. And you do the encore performance of the previous show every Saturday afternoon at 11.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so if you can check, if you missed The Blob last Saturday, and the stellar acting by the teenagers.
Yeah, and teenagers use that term loosely.
Yeah, I know.
You know, you've got Steve McQueen and Anita Corso, you know, and they're what? You know, probably on the top edge of 20s at the very least.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, here they're supposed to be these high school kids?
Right. I love the fact that they're billed as the teenagers in the opening credits. That always cracks me up, man.
Yeah.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit about what you do. You know, I've been on your show a couple of times. I've had the honor of throwing chickens at you. I've been the arm at the door for the joke at the end of the show, and I've seen the kind of work that you put into it. And I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling how much work you put into it. I mean, you write the whole thing. You research it. You get all the information about the cast members and the tidbits about the making of the movie. You have to watch the movies and all that stuff. It takes a lot of time, doesn't it?
Yes, and I hand sew each one of the T-shirts that we sell too. So
I have a store. That's one of my favorite.
That's so funny because you know, that was just written into the promo that we did, and you know, I never thought that would become such a catchphrase.
Yeah,
because I will meet people and they will quote that line to me.
Oh, it's fantastic! I watch your show. Yeah, as you know, Rich, I watch it every Saturday.
And, sure, yeah,
and I always like post some stuff on Facebook while I'm watching it. And I usually post, you know, so long, screwy, see in St. Louis as it's happening at the end, because I know that's the end of the show. And then I also usually post, you know, just very simply, I have a store. That's the which is just great. But yeah, no, it's a lot of work that you put into it. I mean, it's a lot of time. How long does it usually take for you to put together an episode?
Well, it's hard to say because as I'm working on one, I'm also working on, you know, after the shoot from a different show.
Yeah.
So it's hard to do. I mean, you know, basically what I do is, you know, I watch the movie, and as I'm screening it, I'm taking copious notes and breaking it down into the number of segments. If it's long or if there's objectionable material for our MeTV audience, I figure out where the edits should be then. And then once I get that done, it's a matter of, you know, doing the writing. We go into the studio. We shoot, you know, usually about 3 or 4 days out of a month. And a lot of times we're doing more than one show during
right.
that time.
Right.
And then after that, it's, you know, as we call it, post-production, where, you know, I'm finding the different clips and stuff that go with what we've got from the bits that we did, and finding anything else that we need for that, and putting together the edit guide for our amazing editor, director Chris Faulkner, who also is just an incredible guy with such a sense of detail. And, you know, he makes the show, he makes the stuff that I write even better than it could possibly ever be, because he adds so much to it.
Yeah.
And very impressive stuff. And, you know, we've got Chaz on audio, Chaz Ailing, and my executive producer and also an editor, Jim Roach.
Yeah.
And that's the main core of the show. It's four guys, basically. And we all do a lot, and it's such a unique, you know, very, very small group to be doing a TV show.
Yeah, it is, and it just turns out so entertaining and so well. And you know, and again, I want to congratulate you on the fact that, like, it's national, and you guys have been doing great, and now you're getting fans from all over the world. It must be very gratifying after all these years that people still love Svengoolie so much.
It is, and it's nice to see that the people in other parts of the country like the show and have gotten into it. You know, I think we've talked about this before. It seems like everybody grew up with some sort of horror host.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, anybody other than them is no good, you know, because that was their guy.
Yeah.
But I'm very, very flattered that people have taken to the show, even if they had another host that they used to watch. And I think that's what led to my winning the Rondo again.
You did.
Year.
You won the Rondo Award. Congratulations for favorite horror host.
Yeah, it was very cool. From what I understand, I got more votes than anybody or anything in any of the other categories.
That's great.
Yeah, and this is nice because this is the eighth one I've gotten and actually the seventh consecutive one. And the cool thing is there are more and more hosts now in the category, because I think our success around the country has certainly stimulated interest in horror hosting, and it's even gotten some of the markets to decide, hey, we can do our own show like this.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, helped to keep the horror hosting genre alive, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. And, I really still incredibly admire what you do, because there aren't a lot of local programming anymore. There used to be a ton of local TV shows with hosts and shows and things like that. It just doesn't really exist as much anymore.
Yeah, and I think part of it's economic, because a lot of the stations have to do news and public affairs and sports, and they just don't have, you know, the budgets or the time available to devote to doing something that's strictly entertainment.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're still doing it. I you know, and again, like I said, I watch it every, without fail, every Saturday. And I know a ton of people who do. And I think it's awesome. Now, you know, the other thing is, when you watch when you watch these movies, I mean, you watch the whole film, because you have to know where to edit it and where, you know, where the jokes are going to go and stuff like that. How many do you rewatch a lot of the movies that you've seen already?
A lot of times I do. Yeah, I will watch ones that I've already seen, and sometimes we have to make adjustments depending on when we previously ran it, because stuff that ran before it was on the network, we have to, you know, the amount of time that was available to us when we were on locally was just a little bit more
yeah.
than the time that we have, because we have a very set time on the network.
Right.
So we'll have to make some changes and edits and stuff, and we reshoot things to update the shows as well.
Do you have favorites that you've shown, Rich? Like favorite movies that you've shown on the show?
Oh, well, you know, I think we've talked about this before. Those core Universal movies are you know, my favorites. And, of course, then going to, like, Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is certainly a favorite of mine. And, you know, bringing it up, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I always enjoy running that, and that is one of our very most requested. It may be our most requested movie, and that's one of the ones that's coming up.
It's for Frankenstein month. You know, we was it last year that you did Godzilla month?
Yes, mm-hmm.
And so we had you on to talk about that. And this year you chose Frankenstein. You're talking about you're talking about the core Universal movies. You know, you're showing these are all classics that are coming up. I mean, every Saturday is a Frankenstein movie. And did did that idea come from you? Like, hey, let's do a month of Frankenstein.
It was pretty much between me and my boss, Neil Saban.
Yeah.
You know, because we know how important those movies are, and you know how much people love them. They're among the most requested ones. And we're going to start out with, you know, the original 1931 Frankenstein with Boris Karloff as the monster. And then after that, we go to the famed Bride from 1935. Again, you still got Boris as the monster. The funny thing about that and the first movie is that Dr. Frankenstein's wife changes. In the first one, she's Mae Clark, I think.
Yeah.
And the second one, she's a much younger woman, Valerie Hobson, who I think at the time was not even 18 years old.
Wow.
And I think they lied about her age to get her into the movies.
And then you're showing, of course, the classic on May 18th, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, which I never tire of. I've seen it a million times.
Yeah, and that time you've got Glenn Strange taking the monster role. And also, you know, it's the only other time he speaks, really, other than in Ghost of Frankenstein.
Right.
Which you're showing. Actually, we'll run the week after.
You're running that the week after on May 25th, Ghost of Frankenstein. Yeah.
And that one has Lon Chaney Jr. as the Frankenstein monster.
So we got three.
But it has Bela Lugosi as Igor.
Yeah.
Which I think was such a great character, and he did so well with that. For people who think, the only thing Bela could do was, you know, stand there and, you know, be the kind of stiff Dracula.
Yeah.
You see him play Igor, and it's like, you know, it's a real revelation to some people.
It is. It's a great performance. It's a lot of fun to watch, too. So, all right. Rich, hang on, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Rich Coase is with us. He's Sven Gulli. And starting this Saturday, it's a month of Frankenstein. Every Saturday night, there will be another Frankenstein movie playing on Sven Gulli. We're going to talk more with Rich coming up right here on 720 WGN.
Plan 9, and it opened up my eyes. I saw Plan 9. Who was that fella who tried to pass for Bella? I saw Plan 9, where Vampira had no lines. I saw Plan 9. Someone had to help Tor up to get out of his grave, cause he's too fat. But there's stuff worse than that.
Oh, man. How's it going, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are talking with a national treasure, as far as I'm concerned. Sven Gulli, Rich Coase is with us, celebrating 40 years as America's favorite horror host, recent winner again of the Rondo Classic Horror Award for a favorite horror host. We're talking about all the stuff that has to do with the show and Frankenstein Month that's coming up. Hey, Rich, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about those parody songs. You and Doug worked together on those?
Yes, yeah. It's funny because, you know, I'll try to find a song, and, you know, a lot of times people are like, when I first say, well, here's a song I'm going to do, and I tell them the real name of the song, they're like, how does that even make sense?
Yeah.
But it's because, you know, either part of a lyric or something falls into place in my tiny little mind, and it makes sense that I've got a hook for it. So once I figure that out, I'll figure how much of the song we're going to use, and I will contact Doug and say, you know, I'll usually send him an email that tells him exactly what we're going to do, and he makes the entire track himself, and then the first time we rehearse it really is when right before we tape it. He brings in the track, and we play it, you know, in the studio. I go through it once, and if I'm close enough and hitting all the right parts of it, we just record then.
That's fantastic. Now, you've known Doug forever, correct?
Yeah, I went to high school with him. We were in high school in concert band and jazz band and orchestra. And I was a trombone player at the time.
No, wise.
And he played trumpet. And occasionally he does play trumpet on the show, too. Which
yes.
People are really into. They really enjoy getting the chance to see him because he's an incredible musician. He used to work in L.A. during the time after my first show was canceled. He went out to L.A. and worked in the band on the Fox Late Night Joan Rivers show.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. It was a band that was full of incredible musicians, including another guy we went to high school with, keyboardist Randy Waldman, who just got a Grammy this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the band was led by one of the Hudson brothers.
Right.
Mark Hudson, I think.
Yeah, right, exactly. Hey, and his daughter plays, and she was featured on the show.
That's right, yeah. She's going to be coming up again next month, too. She's a sax player.
Yeah.
Natalie, she's really great.
She's terrific.
Her character is Anita Exorcist. Say it fast. Anita Exorcist.
Got it. When did you come up with, and I'm sorry, what do you call the bit where you do the drawing and we have to guess what the word is?
Oh, yeah, that's called Too Drawn Out.
Too Drawn Out. I love that. Rich, that's one of my favorite segments that you do.
Now, do you often get it right?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
See, that's good, because there are some people who will say to me, I never get it. And they say, and the other people just complain, there's no way to understand what you're doing.
That's kind of the charm of it, though. I love that segment. Do you have any of those coming up on the Frankenstein month?
You know, I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, because we've got everything already on tape, and
right.
we shoot so far ahead, I lose track. I'm sorry.
That's okay. By the way, I do have loaded into my system here as a sound bites. I do have this one.
Berwyn!
Which is just so classic. We know that we're, you know, the origin of that, but it never tires, never tires. Let's talk a little bit real quickly here about Kerwin. When did Kerwin become a character on the show?
Well, we always had somebody helping me with the mail.
Right.
At first it was Doug.
Right.
And then because he wasn't always available when we'd tape on more than one day, we started to have little substitute creatures do it. We had Ed the Bat, named for Ed Wood, and he was difficult to handle because it was, you know, a bat on a string that was puppeted.
Right.
And I do the voice, and we did a pitch change on the voice for it that made it very high and screechy. And my boss, Neil, couldn't stand it.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, he said, you know, you got to get rid of that. I don't like it. So we actually did a bit where Neil fired the bat. And we had a bunch of other things. We had like a sort of Godzilla that did the mail with me. We had a pterodactyl that was a disc jockey that was on, and went through a couple other characters. And finally, we used to have a show called Green Screen Adventures on WCIU.
Sure.
That used, you know, stories that kids wrote and they brought them to life on the show. A young lady that worked on that, Jessica Carlton, was a master at creating puppets and such. And actually, she and Chris Faulkner, my director, worked together. I didn't even know about it. And created Kerwin for me. And it was made out of, you know, you've seen at the zoo and stuff, those sort of alligator heads on the end of a stick that you pull the trigger and it moves. That's basically what he is, mounted in a rubber chicken body.
Right.
And when we first got him, it was so cool, and you know, it was great. And with the eyes and the weird teeth and stuff, we were trying to figure out, and finally I figured out that he was like young Jerry Lewis.
Right.
So that's why his voice was sort of like that. And he's very, very popular.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I love his joke of the week. It's I check out the website every week for Kerwin's joke.
Yeah, I'm sure you can't tell this, but we ad-lib those. We just have the joke in front of us, and just, you know, it's stream of consciousness, making it up as we go along, and it's a lot of fun, and I enjoy it. And we always use the warning that the joke is something that Kerwin himself found funny, even if you don't.
Right, exactly. You know, what's really funny is that every you post that every Monday, and it coincides with my dad, who tells a joke every Monday morning on my show.
Sure, yes.
Yes.
Someday we're going to team them up and look out.
That would be fantastic. Absolutely. So Frankenstein is this Saturday, the original, which is just a classic. And then the next Saturday is Bride of Frankenstein, which I think a lot of people consider even better than the original.
I think so, yeah. And, there are some people who are kind of taken aback by the one part with the little small humanoid.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people think that that's kind of silly. In fact, our friend, the great WWE Hall of Famer Mick Foley, really dislikes that part of the movie, even though he loves the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, and that's true. And I think the character of the monster shows even more, you know, subtleties and different levels of emotion in
absolutely. Just it's great stuff, and these are just all four classics. I wanted to make sure we got you on to talk about them, because these are just the classic horror movies that's how I got interested in these movies. Was I went from Universal, and then Universal was the one that got me into the movies. I became fascinated by horror movies and monsters and stuff, but it was the Hammer movies that really put it over the top for me.
Sure. Yes. Yes. We've got a few of those coming up later in the year.
Oh, good.
And actually, here's a little sneak for you.
Sure.
In June, we normally mostly do reruns during the summer. In June, we're going to have four movies that we've never shown on the show before.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really, really great.
And one of them, I believe, is a Hammer movie.
I love the Hammer movies. My favorite of all of them. Because when I was a kid, and I think I've told you this, Rich, when I was a kid, you know, some people wanted to be, you know, like astronauts or baseball players and stuff. I wanted to be Peter Cushing.
Sure.
I wanted to be Van Helsing. I thought Peter Cushing was the coolest man that ever lived. And I adore The Horror of Dracula. You've shown that one, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. We haven't shown it recently, but we have shown it in the past.
Yeah, I just love that. I love the candlesticks and him tearing down the curtains. It's just fantastic. But yeah, those Hammer movies just sort of like really, I dove in head first on those.
Yeah, and the fact that the color on most of them is you know, something that just adds to the whole atmosphere of it.
Yep.
Just as like with the Universals, the black and white and the shadows really helps to create the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And the Hammer ones especially. I mean, there were, at the beginning, of course, the black and white Hammers. But when you get into that color era, it's just amazing stuff.
It really is. And that was mind-blowing to me as a little kid, you know, watching the original Svengoolie. I would watch Jerry every week. And you know, you have so many fans of every generation, Rich. It must be kind of amazing to see like grandparents and parents and little kids who come up to you and get pictures and sign stuff for it.
Yeah, Nick, when I do appearances, it's amazing to me because it really is multi-generational. And, you know, you've got, you know, real little kids who are just so excited to meet me, which I think is very cool because they're not afraid of me.
Right.
And there are the parents who will bring a six-month-old baby and shove it in my face, and the poor child will be frightened, and I tell them, no, your child is frightened, please move it away. And they're, no, he likes you on TV. It's like, yes, but I'm like full size here. And then, you know, we've got teenagers, we've got young adults, all the way through, you know, to the senior citizens. And I've said this before, and I know I repeat this ad nauseum, the coolest thing to me is that when people come up to me and say, I used to watch you when I was a kid, now I watch you with my kids.
Yeah, that's perfect. And I also love the fact that that there are people who sport, there are many people who sport Svengoolie tattoos, which is always one of my favorite things.
Nick, that is amazing to me to this very day.
Right.
I must have seen now at least between 40 and 50 of these tattoos.
Yeah.
And as I've said before, you know, my own family wouldn't do that.
Well, Rich, it's always just an honor and a pleasure to talk to you. I can't wait to see you in person in August at the Flashback. And congratulations on 40 years. We'll do a big celebration at Flashback for that, Rich.
Well, thanks so much. It's going to be great to have you be a part of it. I really appreciate that.
I'm very excited. Rich, always a pleasure, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, and make sure you check out Svengoolie.com.
Svengoolie.com, everybody. Check it out. Okay. Rich, thanks, man.
Thank you, Nick. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks, man. Rich Coase, man. National treasure, Svengoolie. May 4th, Frankenstein, the original. May 11th, Bride of Frankenstein. May 18th, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. May 25th, Ghost of Frankenstein. All on MeTV, Saturday night at 7 o'clock. Frankenstein month, hosted by the great Rich Coase, Svengoolie. All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up next on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, baby, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Tom, who requested that?
That was Mike, wanted to hear a little Kansas. The song is The Pinnacle.
All right. Kansas. We get to hear two more songs by Kansas this morning. Don't hear that very often on the radio. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number here on WGN. We got some texts that that came in while I was talking to Rich, and I'm going to read a few of these before we jump into it. Today marks the anniversary of the first sighting of the Loch Ness Monster. So we'll talk a little bit about Nessie, as he is lovingly called. And then that's going to get us talking about the best monster movies of all time. And I think that that's also a nice segue from Rich's conversation, considering he's doing, you know, Frankenstein movies all month in May. So we'll jump into best monster movies of all time after we talk about Loch Ness Monster. Some text. 773 area code says, my stepdad, George, was Sam and Ted Raimi and Bruce Campbell's high school history teacher. And I believe he appeared in a film Sam did for his Civil War class. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. 312 area code, I was talking about Fosse Verdon, which is a tremendous show about Bob Fosse and his relationship with Gwen Verdon, starring Sam Rockwell and Michelle Williams. And 312 area code says, there's a documentary from 1990 on Bob Fosse called Steam Heat. I've seen it. I highly recommend to see just how incredible a performance Michelle Williams is giving as Gwen Verdon, and also clips of Bob Fosse dancing over the years. He was incredible. Yes, he was, and it's a terrific documentary. It really is. 708 area code says, Nick, did you have the misfortune of watching the Billboard Music Awards last night? No, I didn't. I did not see it. I wasn't even aware it was on. Because after the Cub game ended, I took my prerequisite nap. So I missed it. But I did hear that Madonna, who I adore, did a weird performance with holograms of herself. Something to that effect. I didn't read the article. I saw I was scrolling around on the intranets and on the social medias, and I saw some people posting stuff. I didn't read the details or watch the clip or anything. But no, I did not watch the Billboard Music Awards. 331 area code says, what year did Sven show that movie in 3D? And I remember getting the glasses for the movie at 7-Eleven. Yeah, you would have. I think it was, if I remember correctly, you had to buy a Slurpee to get the 3D glasses. And that was for Revenge of the Creature, the sequel to Creature from the Black Lagoon. It was in 1984. That's when he did it. It was I want to say it was the summer of 1984. And it's kind of a notorious episode of Son of Svengoolie because it just didn't work. Like, everybody got the 3D glasses, and everybody was sitting in front of the TV. I remember vividly watching it, and I think at one point a fish looked like it was in 3D when it swam by. But it didn't work, and to this day, you know, we've talked about it with Rich before. People are still complaining to him about it. It was in 1984. It was 35 years ago, and people are still complaining.
Get a grip.
You know, about it. Oh, I went out and I got the glasses and I want my money back for the, you know, people actually like were demanding their money back for the 3D glasses because it didn't work. And I guess it wasn't really thought through. Rich has told the story many times, because it still comes up. Like I said, I was 35. I brought it up during the interview. I brought up the 3D glasses because it's one of the most notorious, episodes of Svengoolie of all time. And it's just crazy how people still, you know, are mad about it. I wasn't mad about it. I it didn't work. The 3D didn't work, but the show was still good because it was an episode of Svengoolie. See, to me, I don't care what movie he's showing. You know, I'll watch it. I don't care because it's, for me, it's all about Sven.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a great movie, you know, like he's showing four Frankenstein movies in May. So that's, you know, that's a great thing. Blob is a terrible movie. The island of Valley of Lizards that he showed a couple of weeks ago was awful but hilarious. And he did Son of Dr. Jekyll a few weeks ago, And these are not very good, but I watch it. I sit in front of the TV for 2 hours and watch it, even through terrible movies, because sometimes it's even more fun if the movies are bad. But I don't care what movie it is. I watch it. It's not, that's not what it hooks me in. It's like, oh, well, Svengoolie's showing this movie this week, so I'm going to tune in. No, I don't care. The movie is secondary.
Valley of Lizards.
It was ridiculous. And they recycled, and Rich talks about, like, behind-the-scenes stuff, about the movies, and I love the stuff that he does where he talks about the cast and what they did before, and then talks about their credits and some of the behind the scenes stories of the movie itself. And this thing, this Valley of Lizards or whatever the hell it was called from a couple of weeks ago, was loaded with stock footage that was taken from other movies. These characters, they end up in a meteor hits, and these two guys end up on another planet that is dominated by giant creatures and cave people and stuff. And one of the lead in it went on to play the mayor, Carmine from Animal House. He ended up that he was that guy, and But they said they had all these stock footage of, like, giant creatures and stuff that was taken from, like, 5-6 other movies. And at one point, I'm watching the movie, and they actually stole a clip. They took a clip from a Godzilla movie because Rodan shows up. And I was like, you can't, Rodan is iconic, you know what Rodan looks like. And so all of a sudden, I'm watching the movie, and they're like, oh, look, and they point to the sky, and Rodan flies by. And I'm like, well, you can't put Rodan in a generic giant lizard movie? You think you're going to get away with that? You think people are actually going to watch it and not know who Rodan is?
I wonder if they got a call from Toho the next day.
I have no idea. It was in the movie. Rodan. You can't, and as soon as I saw it, I was like, man... Come on. By the way, the Rodan will make, of course, an appearance in the new Godzilla movie.
Honestly, I'm more excited about the rest of the monsters than I am about Godzilla.
Really?
Yeah, because I love, how do you say, is it said, I always say Ghidorah, but it's how you say it differently.
Well, it's some people say Ghidra, some people Ghidra. Say Ghidorah.
I think it's Ghidra, though. I think that's how you
put it. Well, the Americans say it that
yeah.
way.
But he's my man. He's my main dude.
Yeah, no, I love them, too. He's got three heads, man.
It's genius.
Yeah.
I'm very psyched to see that happen.
Yeah. Well, and you got Mothra, too. It's going to be unbelievable. And we are going to get to monster movies, too, coming up. But, okay, so the Loch Ness Monster was sighted. Today marks the anniversary. In 1933, the modern legend of the Loch Ness Monster is born when a sighting makes local news on May 2nd, 1933. The newspaper, Inverness Courier, relates an account of a local couple who claimed to have seen, quote, an enormous animal rolling and plunging on the surface. The story of the monster, which was a moniker chosen by the Courier editor, so the word monster was picked by this person, becomes a media phenomenon, with London newspapers sending correspondents to Scotland and a circus offering a £20,000 sterling reward for the capture of the beast. After the April 1933 sighting was reported in the newspaper on May 2nd, interest steadily grew, especially after the couple claimed to have seen the animal on land. Amateur investigators have for decades kept an almost constant vigil, and in the late 60s, several British universities launched sonar expeditions to the lake. Nothing conclusive was found, but in each expedition, the sonar operators detected some type of large moving underwater objects. In 1975, another expedition combined sonar and underwater photography in Loch Ness. A photo resulted that, after enhancement, appeared to show what vaguely resembled a giant flipper of an aquatic animal. Further sonar expeditions in the 80s and 90s resulted in more inconclusive readings. Revelations in 1994 that the famous 1934 photo was a complete hoax has only slightly dampened the enthusiasm of tourists and investigators for the legendary beast of Loch Ness. And it has persisted, along with Bigfoot, too. That's another one. I've actually had people. I've actually had a couple of people on the show who are full-on Bigfoot believers and hunters, and part of like the Bigfoot society. There's a portion of the population that do believe that the Bigfoot exists, and actually have, you know, these groups that study it and hunt it and all that kind of stuff. But the Loch Ness Monster, I always thought the Loch Ness Monster was cool because he resembled a dinosaur. And when I was a kid, I loved dinosaurs. And you know, and obviously Godzilla is one of my favorite things ever in the world. So the giant monster, I'm a big fan of anything with giant monsters in it. I'm in 100%. But yeah. So now you know. You have a background, a Scottish heritage. Mm-hmm. You lived in Scotland.
Lived in Scotland. Father is Scottish.
Yeah.
Where does
Nessie stand in this world?
I mean, people love it as just a fun thing.
Yeah,
it's just a fun symbol of you know, something uniquely Scottish in a lot of ways, and obviously they proliferate it for tourists.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you get your Nessie themed mug. Get your Nessie plush.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it, you know, they take advantage of the tourists and get a lot and make some dough.
Yeah, it's genius.
Now, have you seen Amazon Women on the Moon?
No. I have not.
You've not seen Amazon Women on the Moon?
No.
Have you seen the Kentucky Fried Movie?
Yeah.
Okay, it's very much like that.
Okay.
It's like an episodic movie, but this one, Kentucky Fried Movie was directed by, well, the Zuckers
yeah.
wrote it, but Landis directed it. John Landis directed it.
Yeah.
It was a movie, that's how we got Animal House, is because of Kentucky Fried. But Amazon Woman on the Moon came out in the 80s. Landis executive produced it, and it was there are about 8 or 9 different directors, including Joe Dante. Landis directed a few. Peter Horton, who used to be on 30-something. And it is very much like that. And they do a parody of Jack Palance Unsolved Mysteries or whatever, or Robert Stack's Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah.
But they do it with Henry Silva. And Ripley's Believe It or Not was the one that Jack Palance hosted. So they do like a Believe It or Not takeoff on it, and where they said that they discovered that Jack the Ripper turned out to be the Loch Ness Monster. So they have like the Loch Ness Monster like animated in black and white footage, like dressed up in old, you know,
like
old English clothing, walking through the streets of London. And it's hilarious. It's
amazing.
It's hilarious because they combined like these two legends, Jack the Ripper and Loch Ness Monster, as part of the Unsolved Mystery.
Yeah.
So, but it's really funny the way they animate the and he's very adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As Jack the Ripper. Well, one of my favorite movies that mentions Nessie is Napoleon Dynamite when he gives the little speech.
Last week, Japanese scientists placed explosive detonators at the bottom of Lake Loch Ness to blow Nessie out of the water. Sir Court Godfrey of the Nessie Alliance summoned the help of Scotland's local wizards to cast a protective spell over the lake and its local residents and all those who seek for the peaceful existence of our underwater ally.
Our underwater ally,
yeah.
Nessie.
I don't remember that because I've only seen Napoleon Dynamite once because I hated it. So
you didn't like it?
No, I can't stand it.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. But I've only seen it the one time, so I don't even remember that. I just remember Vote Pedro. That's the only thing that I remember from that.
Yeah. A lot of t-shirts got sold.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, so, you know, I'll tell you what, though. The guy who made that movie, he made a movie that everybody hates and I like. Like, because I can't stand Napoleon Dynamite. He's made a couple of other movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're very distinctive. He's got a very...
Yeah, Jared Hess.
Yeah. I love Nacho Libre.
Nacho Libre is amazing.
And everybody hates it. Everybody I know hates it and is like, oh, God, it's such a disappointment after Napoleon Dynamite. I think it's 9,000 times funnier.
Oh,
I think Jack Black is hilarious in it.
He turns it on for that movie.
He's hilarious in it. So, get that cone out of my face. It's my favorite one.
Chancho, lend me your sweats.
Get that cone out of my face. All right. Well, look, Loch Ness. Anybody believe? Now, they've made documentaries. They've done. Yeah. I mean, this thing has been, you know, has been around in the zeitgeist for many, many, many years, and it still is. So this is the anniversary of the first published sighting of the Loch Ness Monster. If anybody has any thoughts on Nessie, you can call us or send us a text at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And that's going to jump us into the conversation that we're going to have about the best monster movies of all time. And we would love to hear from you on that. Best monster movies of all time. There's a ton of them. 312-981-7200. Prog rock, everybody. Welcome back. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. It's a little Kansas for you. And welcome back. A little bit later on, we are going to talk about some sort of surprising and intense celebrity feuds over the years. So that'll be fun. So today marks the anniversary of the first reported sighting of the Loch Ness Monster. And so we're talking a little bit about Nessie, and that's going to lead us into our conversation about the best monster movies of all time. And I love big monster movies. I love them. It's one of my favorite genres. And I can't even explain to you how excited I am about this new Godzilla movie. It's going to be so awesome. They showed an extended trailer for it when we saw Avengers in IMAX 3D, and it was just, I was like, I couldn't even.
It's one of those movies that just, anytime Godzilla happens, it's an event.
It's just the best. Except for the Roland Emmerich version, which is horrible. All right, let's see. Here's Paul on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Morning.
Morning.
I wanted to let you know that Nessie's been used, 1974, 1975 was a Doctor Who episode called Terror of the Zygons.
Okay.
Tom Baker episodes. And Nessie was supposedly controlled by the Zygons, the alien.
Uh-huh.
It was a robot controlled by them, and they were going to use it to start destroying the world.
So it was actually Nessie was in a Tom Baker Doctor Who episode. I didn't know that.
Right, Terror of the Zygons is the name of the
okay.
The four episodes, and as I said, it was a robot controlled by these aliens.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll have to look out for that.
It's one of the better episodes.
Yeah. Well, that's my favorite Doctor. You know, he is the Doctor. So
probably yeah. First saw him on Channel 11.
After I was up too late watching Python, that would come on, and so I would be all right. Paul, thanks, man.
Thank you much.
That's pretty cool. Loch Ness Monster in the Doctor Who episode. Here's Jeff on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how are you?
All right.
Hey, I know you're talking about movies and monster movies and stuff, but I was just curious. So I'm going to take a music angle on there. And are you a fan of Frank Zappa?
Not a huge fan, but I am a fan. I admire his work, sure.
Okay. On his Roxy and Elsewhere, it's a live album, he does a song called Cheapens, and it's his take on 1950s monster movies.
Yeah, and you know what? Dr. Demento used to play that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering if maybe you had heard it. And if not, well, give it a listen. Maybe you would...
Yeah, I've heard it because of Dr. Demento. He would play that every once in a while. So I did. Okay. I have heard it. It's very cool.
Okay.
Thanks Jeff. Take care. Friend of mine had an extra ticket for Zappa, and was like, "You want to go?" And I'm like, "Okay." It was amazing. I'm not a hardcore, because I know hardcore fans of Zappa, and
yeah.
it was amazing, and it was an extra special treat. Because I'm a Sting fanatic, and I had seen Sting the night before, And then the next night, I went with my buddy to see Zappa. And then who shows up? Sting.
Sting and Zappa?
Yeah. And Ooh. And Zappa Ooh. And Zappa introduced him as Mr. Sting when he came out. And they did Murder by Numbers.
Oh, wow.
And it was a really amazing show. I mean, he's an amazing musician. He was a brilliant guy and an unbelievable conductor. Like, he was the coolest conductor. And his band, I mean, come on. I mean, like, he would get the best musicians on the planet. And I'd only seen him just the one time, and I have a cursory knowledge of his music.
Sure.
But it was really great. I was so happy, too, that I went. I was like, yeah, okay, I'll go. And then Sting shows up, and I'm like, wow.
I just love his, one of my favorite things to watch is his address to, what was it, Congress or something?
Yeah, about the parental advisory.
Such a smart guy.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
Brilliant.
He's a brilliant guy. And I like his kids, too. I think Dweezil and Moon Unit are awesome. So, okay, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we've got a few more Loch Ness Monster stories to get to. And then we're going to jump into the world of the best monster movies of all time. For Talk and Text, get a hold of us at 312-981-7200. The news is up next. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. And that wraps up the Triple Play of Kansas. So it's one artist, three songs. Get them in, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. That's also the number to call or to text. Because in honor of the first sighting, this is the anniversary of the first sighting of the Loch Ness Monster, we are talking about the best monster movies of all time. So what are your favorites? The best monster movies of all time. 312-981-7200. Justin in Portage sent a text that says, I love the South Park episode in which Chef's parents encounter the Loch Ness Monster. Says, love you, Nick. I totally forgot about that.
Neat about tree, Fitty.
I totally forgot about that one. Ike in Country Club Hill says the remake of The Blob is a very underrated monster movie. Another example of how a good remake can overshadow the original, like The Fly or The Thing. I agree. I totally agree with that. 779 area code says the fisherman hunting river monsters thinks Nessie is a Greenland shark. A Greenland shark. That's what he thinks Nessie is? All right. 301 area code says the Universal Monster movies are the greatest. Glad to see that Svengoolie is showing some of the Frankenstein ones this month, including my all-time favorite, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. People love that movie.
I love all the Abbott and Costello Meet.
Yeah.
They're just funny.
That's the quintessential one, though, because, like, all of the Universal, classic Universal monsters are in it. And, I mean, It's just a classic, and there's a reason why people want to watch that one all the time. There's a reason why it's the most requested movie that Svengoolie shows. So, I remember I saw it as a kid. I just loved it. Just thought it was great. So, monster movies. Do you have a favorite?
A favorite. That's a tough one. I know one of my favorites is Cloverfield, and I know that was a movie that made you a little nauseous because you were sitting up front.
Yeah. Right? We showed up late, and we were sitting like four rows away from the front of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And several times I had to look away from the screen or else I was going to barf. But I'm sure if I sat further back, and I like the movie. I like the movie very much. But it was physically tough to see. I mean, I've seen it since, and I've watched it on TV, and it's a different effect than sitting 2 feet away from a giant screen
where it's
nothing but shaky cam for an hour and a half. But yeah, no, I thought that movie was really cool.
It was a nice turn on the found footage thing.
Yeah.
They did it right.
I agree. I think Cloverfield's great, and it's a giant monster movie, so I have an affinity for that.
It's the debut of Matt Reeves as well, who would do Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which is probably the best outside of the original, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, I think all of them are good.
They're all good.
That's the thing. You know, when Planet of the Apes, when the remake of, or when Rise of the Planet of the Apes came out, that was one of those movies that seriously came out of nowhere, because I mean obviously I'm a huge fan of the Planet of the Apes movies, the original series of movies, the original five Planet of the Apes movies. I mean, I grew up on them. And then Tim Burton did that thing in 2001, which is one of the worst. It's easily Tim Burton's worst movie, I think. Easily. And it was horrible. And then when I heard that they were going to do another one, this, you know, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I was like, what? And, you know, the bitter taste of the Tim Burton remake was still in my mouth. And it was a director I'd never heard of before, who, by the way, directed one of the worst movies I've seen all year this year, which is a movie that is incomprehensible. My parents and I went to see it. It's a Captive State, one of the worst movies. Yeah. One of the worst movies I've ever seen. And I didn't even know what the hell was going on half the time. I'm not kidding. It's incomprehensible.
It was the same. He also did the live action adaptation of Ghost in the Shell, I think.
Maybe he did. I don't know.
Yeah, Captive State was.
Oh my god. Oh my god. But anyway, so when Rise came out, not only did I never hear of the director before, not only did 20th Century Fox bury it at the end of August, which is, you know, usually an indication. August is not the best time to release a movie, especially at the end of August. That's a dumping ground for crappy movies. So I thought, oh god, never heard of the director. Late August release. You know, Tim Burton's remake was the worst, and this is going to be terrible. And that's one of those movies that surprised me more than you can imagine, because it's great. I mean, I had the lowest expectations going into that movie, and it was great. And then the trilogy is phenomenal. All those movies are great. All three of the latest version of the Planet of the Apes movies are just great. And I can't express how great Andy Serkis is in them, and the work that he does, and how memorable a character Caesar is. They're great. They're great movies. So, now we're into monster movies here. You a fan of Pacific Rim?
I am. I really hate the second one, though. But I really enjoyed the first one. I thought it was big, dumb, fun robots fighting monsters, which is like literally what more could you want?
Well, I like both of them. The second one's not nearly as good as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I like about the second one is that a lot of the battles in the original Pacific Rim are at night or during rainstorms.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I liked about the battles in the second one was that it was bright and sunny.
Mm-hmm.
And you could actually see the monsters and you could actually see the robots very clearly.
And John Boyega's really great in it. I think he's really fun to watch.
It says, after a century's worth of monsters coming up from outer space, Pacific Rim shifts it. They stopped looking at the skies. The monsters were coming from deep beneath the Pacific Ocean floor. And it's fantastic. I saw that one in IMAX and 3D the first time, and it was amazing. It was a bunch of buddies of mine and I went.
Mm-hmm.
All my buddies that we used to hang out at Ricochet's. We were all like there's a big contingency who hang out at Ricochet's or used to hang out at Ricochet's. I haven't been there in 4 years, but that were massive, ridiculous Hawks fans. We used to watched all the, if I wasn't at a game, I would watch them at Ricochet's, and all of us would be there. And second only to the Hawks were kaiju movies that we all shared a love for. So all of us like did a road trip to see Pacific Rim, like the day it came out. We were like, okay, we all met at Ricochet's, had a couple of beers, and then we saw it in Skokie, in the IMAX 3D in Skokie. And we all loved it. We all just thought it was great.
Yeah, Guillermo del Toro was having a lot of fun in that movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can tell.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. Next up here, they mentioned The Thing, which is, I mean, what are we talking about here? It's pretty tough to trust your friends when a parasitic extraterrestrial life form has infiltrated your remote research station located in Antarctica tundra. The Thing assimilates other organisms and mimics them, making it nearly impossible to tell whom it's inhabiting. That is, until it manifests itself into horrifying, unimaginable creatures. Yeah, what can you say about The Thing? It's just, you know, It's a masterpiece. It's a classic. Mm-hmm. And God, I love Kurt Russell in that movie. I mean, I love him in everything, but I really love him in that movie. R.J. McCready is one of my favorite characters. And, you know, the special effects to this day, Rob Bottin's practical makeup effects still stand up.
And he was so young. He was like, what, 20?
He was in his 20s? Yeah, he was in his 20s.
Early 20s.
He was like a protege of Rick Baker. You know, when Rick Baker did American Werewolf, he did The Howling. Mm-hmm. Bottin did The Howling. He did the makeup. I personally think Rob Bottin is one of the greatest makeup artists of all time.
Oh, yeah.
He did the makeup and the whole the makeup for Tim Curry in Legend, which is one of the most gorgeous creature makeups of all time. Of all time. And that's Bottin. Carpenter, when I interviewed Carpenter, he said he was a pain in the ass to work with.
Yeah. There's there's that great feature that's been on like every edition released on at least DVD, I know, where it's where they go through just the whole making of the thing, and Rob Bottin tells some hilarious stories about how they like basically singed everybody's hair off.
Yeah.
When they were doing the neck coming off. And yeah. I feel like I probably know the answer to this. So how much do you hate the Thing prequel?
Oh God, I can't stand it. I can't stand it. You know what else? You know what they, on top of it being completely unnecessary and stupid, and it was funny because that had just, the first time I interviewed Carpenter at Flashback, that had just come out.
That was like 2011, I want to say.
Something, 2012 or something like that was the first time I interviewed him. Yeah, I think it had been out for like five, 6 months, but it had just recently been released. And when we did the Q&A, Carpenter was very, you know, because I mentioned how much I hated it, and Carpenter was, He didn't come out and say anything negative about it. But he asked the crowd. He was like, "How many people liked the prequel?" And it got a smattering of applause. And so I was like, "What's wrong with you?" You know, and I said, "What's wrong with you people?" And he's like, "No, no, no. They're entitled to their opinion." But he clearly didn't like it.
Yeah,
you know. But the thing is that Carpenter is. I've talked about this on the air before. Carpenter loves when people remake his stuff. Although that's not one of his. That's a, you know, he remade that. So he didn't get a piece of it. But I was asking him like about Assault on Precinct 13, you know,
with Fishburne and Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, which is terrible. And I asked him about that, and I asked him about, you know, other people remaking his stuff, and he's like, "Hey, I don't care. I get paid." That's all he cares about. He doesn't care. It doesn't bother him if they remake the movie as long as the check clears. Carpenter's fine with it, but he didn't get any money on the prequel to The Thing,
right?
So because it wasn't his original idea. But the stuff in that movie, I mean, you know, it's just so classic. And the blood test scene is just one of the best scenes in horror movie history. I mean,
it's so tense.
It's amazing.
It's really something special when you can watch a movie 100 times and still feel that tension.
Yeah.
That's like, anytime I pop it in, it's just, oh.
Well, when Palmer's blood, you know, pops up, that's really one of the biggest jumps ever. I mean, you know.
That's how you do a jump scare.
Oh, absolutely.
I've seen so many bad jump scares.
Absolutely.
That is a true jump scare.
And on top of that, it's such a tense scene anyway.
Yeah.
And what these guys have gone through already. I remember the first time that scene where the dog cage where all the dogs are, when the first, I don't know what it is, but it's weird and pissed off, whatever it is, that whole thing, I just was like, I don't even know what's going on right now. This is unbelievable. And by the time, you know, the fibrillator paddle scene and the head crawling around,
God.
I mean, I just was like, what is this? What planet is this? And I just think I thought it was so great. And again, I said this 1,000 times on the air, the damn thing bombed when it came out.
I think that's one of Roger Ebert's biggest missteps was his review of The Thing.
Oh, I think a lot of critics misstepped on their reviews of The Thing. And I think the public missed out. They know that now.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the fact that it's considered a masterpiece now and that there's a huge following, that people are passionate about it. 1982, it it nobody liked it, and nobody went to see it.
And that's the beauty of home video.
Yeah. God. Yeah, but that's a movie that you got to see on the...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, on the big screen. I went to the Music Box, I don't know how many months ago it was.
They did a 70 millimeter.
It was 70 mil. It was in 70, but the print was bad.
Yeah, it was like, but it's one of the few surviving prints.
Yeah. No, it was great. I mean, it was fantastic. Because when I first saw it, I saw it in 70 millimeter, State Lake Theater, downtown. And,
oh, God.
You know, I saw it in 70 millimeter, and then I saw it in 70 mil multiple times. Because, you know, the movie's great.
Yeah.
And I went back and saw it a bunch of times. So I had seen it in 70 a bunch of times. But it was really cool to go back and see it, even though the print was not in the best shape. So, all right, we got a break here, but we're talking about monster movies, obviously The Thing, one of the greatest, and giant monster movies, any of these monster movies, in honor of our friend Nessie. So what do you think? 312-981-7200. All right. Okay, let's break here.
When I was young, I'd listen to the radio, waiting for my favorite songs. When they played, I'd sing along. It made me smile.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. That woman had a voice of an angel, if there ever was a voice of an angel. Who requested that?
That was Michael from Iowa. Right. Wanted to hear Little Carpenters.
She was amazing. Karen Carpenter, mm-hmm. Incredible voice. And also provides one of my favorite moments in Tommy Boy. When they're like, you can change the station. No, I don't care. Same. And then they cut away and they come back and they're singing and crying. That's so funny. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All coming up. Texts are coming in. We're talking about the best monster movies of all time in honor of this anniversary of Loch Ness Monster's first sighting. 419 area code says, Them with James Whitmore and a young James Arness. Yeah, giant ant movie. Can't go wrong with a giant ant movie. That's pretty much, that's a classic, though. That really is a classic. 779 area code says that Gamera is my monster of choice, protects America. Okay.
Go America.
Yeah. 708 area code says that Alien is my favorite monster movie. The original Alien. Which is a great monster movie, and it's a great monster.
35 millimeter print, May 18th.
Yep. At the Music Box. All right, this gathering of monster movies that we're talking about here was put together by Rolling Stone magazine. And next they mentioned Gremlins, which is obviously a great movie. But that's another one I watch at Christmas all the time. It's a great Christmas movie, Gremlins. Intended as a Christmas gift, this cute Furby-esque creature named Mogwai is more devious than it appears. Water causes it to multiply into hundreds of rampaging creatures that, when fed after midnight, transform into grotesque little reptilian monsters that specialize in mayhem. I prefer the sequel. I think
oh, the new batch.
Oh my God!
Have you seen the Key and Peele sketch about that?
Absolutely, a million times.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and that's all in the movie. The second movie, you know, was much more Dante. It was a much more his movie than the first one. The first one's great. The first one really is great.
Big crowd pleaser.
But the second one is completely batcrap crazy. And you know, I mean, it opens with the Looney Tunes logo because that's what it is. It's like a 2-hour live action Looney Tunes episode. Have you seen Looney Tunes? Looney Tunes Strike Back with Brendan Fraser.
Oh, Back in Action.
Back in Action.
Yeah.
Love it.
Really?
Love it.
Huh?
Love it.
I mean, it's not Space Jam.
No, it's better than Space Jam.
Get out of here.
I hated Space Jam.
That's because you don't like Michael Jordan.
No, I like Michael Jordan. I don't like what they did with the characters. That was the tone of Back in Action is much much more
Looney Tunes
accurate to the nature, or the absolute insane nature of the Looney Tunes. the anarchy, and that's what Gremlins 2 is. Gremlins 2 is just anarchy. There are no rules. Anything for a laugh. People didn't know what to make of it because the first one is sort of like a horror movie. The first Gremlins is, I mean, it's got laughs in it, but it's played pretty straight, like a kind of a scary horror movie. Everything is insane in the second one. They kill Dick Miller in the first movie and he comes back. I mean, because Joe Dante's not going to make a movie without Dick Miller in it. And so they made up some excuse about him surviving in the first movie when they clearly kill him off in the first movie. But just the stuff in that movie, that all the Christopher Lee stuff, Hulk Hogan, the cameo with Hulk Hogan. It's just great. And that sketch, by the way, when that sketch first, you know, became popular on the internet and stuff, the Key and Peele sketch you're talking about, Joe Dante retweeted it, the link to it, and he said that's exactly how we made the movie.
I've always had one burning question about Gremlins, and I love Gremlins. I think it's great. Isn't it always after midnight? Like, when are we before midnight versus after midnight?
Well, you know, they actually bring that up in the second movie. Bring that up when he's trying to convince these people that the Gremlins are loose in the Trump, or not Trump, clamp, sorry. But he was clearly clearly based on both Trump and Ted Turner. It was like John Glover was Trump and Ted Turner combined in that. It was, again, brilliant. The TV satire and that stuff and Robert Prosky as the horror host, as the, oh my God, I love that movie. But they kind of talk about it when he's trying to convince them, when Billy's trying to convince them that he's telling them the rules. One of the guys goes, oh, well, let me ask you a question then about that whole midnight thing. What if you're on a plane and you're crossing time zones? Can you feed them? And they're like questioning like the logic of the midnight thing. And then that's when one of them busts out through the equipment and eats him.
And that's Joe Dante's answer.
Yeah. That's it.
Here it is.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah. So they picked The Mummy here, and they picked the 1932 version and the 1999 version, but both entirely different things.
Both entirely awesome.
Yeah. Oh, they're both. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I wasn't necessarily really scared of the Universal movies. I mean, I thought they were cool and kind of creepy, and, you know, they freaked me out a little bit. The Mummy scared the hell out of me. That was the first Universal classic that really scared the hell out of me. And I remember, I'll never forget the first time I watched it, and the dude who sees the mummy move for the first time is just laughing maniacally. That scared the hell out of me when I was a kid. I was like, no, that's it. I can't deal with this.
Yeah. It's very disturbing.
The tone of that movie is really, really sinister. Yeah.
Boris.
It's fantastic.
He's amazing.
Fantastic. Cloverfield is next. We talked about that one. We've got a lot more here. We got monster movies, the best monster movies, in honor of the anniversary of the first sighting of the Loch Ness monster. If anybody's got some Loch Ness or Nessie stories you want to share, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and your favorite monster movies. We'll get back to that conversation after we break for the news. Carpenters, everybody, on Triple Play Thursday. You mean Triple Play Thursday? One artist, three songs. Get them in. 312-981-7200. How you doing? We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Thursday morning right here. Steve Grzanich follows at 5 o'clock. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And we were talking about the anniversary of the Loch Ness Monster's first sighting. That was today in 1933. And that got us talking about big monsters and monster movies. What are some of your favorites? We want to hear from you. We've got some texts coming in. 630 area code says, I'm thinking about your anniversary show of The Late Show with Craig Ferguson and the Kurt Russell version of The Thing. In my mind, it's a mosh of being very scared, a very scared adult during the blood test, and listening to Craig and Jeff talking about seeing Wilford Brimley at the salad bar. Uh, 708 area code says, The Tingler with Vincent Price. You know it's phony, but it's still intriguing to watch. I love Vincent Price. I love your show. I listen every night. Thank you very much. The Tingler is a classic. William Castle, who was the king of the gimmicks, you know, doing the little stunts in the theaters and stuff like that. He wired certain seats with electric jolts because it was about a monster that would be in your spine. And so he wired the seats, William Castle. And speaking of William Castle, 301 area code says, Joe Dante is awesome. My favorite is probably Matinee. That is a great movie that about seven people have seen. You've seen Matinee, then?
Yeah. I know one of my favorite DVD releasing houses, Shout Factory, did a great edition of it that I picked up, and it's awesome.
It's a great movie.
So good.
It's a great movie. You know, obviously inspired by William Castle, John Goodman plays the movie producer, and they're having an exclusive screening of Mant, half man, half ant, all terror. And that, you know, the deluxe versions of that movie that you can get on DVD and Blu-ray, there's tons more Mant footage that you can watch. Like they say, Dante almost shot an entire movie called Mant, and you know, used some of the stuff in the movie. But the movie is not only really funny and but it's also really sweet. And the kids in it are really good, like really really great teenage performances. And the movie is about the Cuban Missile Crisis and how everybody was really tense about it, especially people in Florida, and that they thought maybe the world was going to end. And the best thing to do was to go to a scary movie. And I love that movie.
Came out the year I was born.
God, that makes me feel really old. But yeah, no, it's a great film. I wish more people would have seen it because it didn't do well at all at the box office. But I think people have gone back and discovered it. But it's a wonderful movie, and that's one of my favorite Joe Dante movies too. They also mention here in the article Little Shop of Horrors, the 1986 musical version, which is just classic. And everybody in it and the music is so good. The songs, it's a great musical. Suddenly Seymour is one of my favorite songs from a musical ever.
Yeah.
And, the number is so good in the movie. Mm-hmm. And,
it's Alan Menken, right?
Yeah.
Who go on to, help the Disney Renaissance.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean the cast is unbelievable in Little Shop, and it was so great to screened that one for my film club, and we showed the alternative ending where the plants get to be Godzilla size and just destroy the world. So here's Peter on WGN. Hey, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
All right, what's up?
Well, I was thinking about that the monster in Predator was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. That's a classic design monster right there, Predator.
Pretty slimy, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right, Peter, thanks.
Thanks. Good morning.
Take care. Yeah, Predator, you know, I thought I liked the second one better than the first one. I liked the first one, but I liked the second one better than the first one.
Well, Gary Busey's turning it on.
Gary Busey is amazing in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like any of the Alien Predator movies. I think they all suck. The Alien versus Predator movies. Oh,
they're so bad. I love them.
Terrible.
I love them.
I did like Predators.
That was good.
With Adrian Brody.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just did one like a couple years ago.
They did one this year. Last year.
The Predator, right?
Yeah, The Predator.
No, I can't even.
I
remember liking it. Who was in it?
It's oh my god,
I can't even think of it.
It's the kid from Room 1. Olivia Munn is in it.
Oh right, Olivia Munn. See, that gets a pass for me,
mm-hmm.
because it's Olivia Munn.
It's
Keegan-Michael Key. Yeah.
And it's directed by Shane Black.
Yeah, Shane Black directed. No, I liked it. I remember liking it. And I liked, because it's Thomas Jane and Keegan-Michael Key are paired up in that.
Yeah.
And it's a ragtag group of guys, criminals. Mm-hmm. No. Now it's all coming back. I liked that movie.
I thought I was one of my only people who liked it. And I'm a huge fan of the Predator franchise.
Yeah. I just, the AVP, I can't do that.
Oh, they're so terrible.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right, here's one. Tremors. Oh, my God, do I love that movie. Fred Ward, Kevin Bacon, phenomenal in it. Reba McEntire.
Oh, God, I was so happy.
And what, Michael Gross, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're nothing but guns. They're like in their basement loaded up with
And Michael Gross basically becomes the protagonist of the sequels.
Right. I know there's a bunch of them. I've only seen the second one. Yeah. The first one is great. The first Tremors is great.
They came so close. I know they had one series, they had a TV series.
They did have a TV series that was on like USA, I think.
Yeah. And they were going to bring it back with Kevin Bacon. They were going to do a whole new one, but it just never got off the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward, man. Those guys, and that's another one of those movies that came out of nowhere. That was one of those things. I remember when it came out in 1990. And like, what is this? What is this movie? Tremors. You know? And they did not acknowledge Dune at all in the movie.
That's okay.
And again, I'm one of the few people on the planet that actually really likes David Lynch's version of Dune.
You and me.
I really like it. I like the long version. I like the Alan Smithy version where he took his name off of it.
Yeah.
And I like it. You know, I'm a fan of the book too, and I know a lot of people who love the books. Just despise the movie. And, well, I mean, now it's being done. You know, I think a lot of people are very excited about the version of Dune that's being filmed right now.
Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah. And he's the right guy to do it. And
totally. Totally.
I'm excited about it. But I back the David Lynch version. Absolutely. It was really funny because I remember I saw that movie with my girlfriend, my girlfriend at the time. And she was the one I told you about. Tom, she was the one who was said she had a kid and she was much older than me.
Yeah.
Which is my McDonald's manager. So we went to see it and she slept through the whole thing. She fell asleep about 20 minutes into it. She just fell asleep. She slept through the whole thing. And the fact one of the things I love about David Lynch's Dune is that I can't remember. It was Universal. Yeah, it was Universal. It was the studio that released it. I can't believe that they gave that movie like a multi-theater release, like a big release. I was like, how the hell does this end up in a mall? How do people in malls watch this movie? Because, you know, people, I thought, you know, they advertised it like it was going to be another Star Wars kind of a, you know, sci-fi thing. And, oh, it's going to be so cool. And I think people who weren't familiar with it, it's a David Lynch art movie is what it is. And it's a weird one. And I think people who went to see it, you know, at the local multiplex was like, what the hell is this? I just find that really amusing that it played at multiplexes and it should have just played at art houses.
It's such a weird movie. Patrick Stewart's great in it, though.
I feel like everybody's good. Sting's good in it, for God's sake.
Sting.
Bringing that flying fat man. Kenneth McMillan, of course, Kyle MacLachlan, you know, Sean Young. Young Virginia Madsen's in that movie. I'm a fan. I'm a fan. I'm excited about the new one, though. Like, legitimately excited. Because he's like, he's the premier science fiction director right now.
After Blade Runner 2049?
Yeah.
Which,
even after Arrival. Arrival's a great movie. You know? But yeah, I think he's great. They include Pan's Labyrinth on here. Basically, you just put all of Del Toro's movies. He's got creatures. He's got monsters in all of his movies. That's his thing. You know, I did not love The Shape of Water as much as everybody else did.
I think, well, it's his most commercial movie outside of maybe Pacific Rim. Like, it's the biggest marriage of his weirdness and something that people can swallow. Because it's Beauty and the Beast in a lot of ways.
Well, it's E.T.
It's a lot of stuff that people can recognize, right?
Except, you know, having, like, you know, explicit sex scenes with a fish man is a little weird.
They didn't do that in E.T.
But, what did it beat for Best Picture?
Oh, hold on. Let me pull up.
Because
I loved it. But I don't know if I
like it. I didn't love it. I like it.
I wish he would have gotten more recognized for Pan's Labyrinth, which I think
Pan's Labyrinth is pretty great. My favorite of his movies, though, is
Devil's Backbone?
That's my favorite. That's a scary movie.
It is very scary. And a great history lesson as well for the Spanish Civil War.
I think Devil's Backbone is a really great movie. So, all right, well, let's break here. We're talking about monster movies, and if you want to jump in, we want to hear from you. Loch Ness Monster's anniversary sighting today, and that got us to thinking about great monster movies. What are your favorite monster movies? 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
I'll say goodbye to love. No one ever cared if I should live or die. Time and time again, the chance for love has passed me by. And all I know of love is how to live without it. I just can't see.
Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. And our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200 if you would like to join us. The anniversary of the Loch Ness Monster's first sighting is today. And so that got us to talking about our best monster movies of all time. And I want to hear from you guys. Talk and text at 312-981-7200. There's been a lot of great monster movies over the years, we're remembering a bunch of them right now. So let's see. We got some texts that just came in. Chris in Elk Grove says, what up, Nick? An underrated monster movie I love is Jack Brooks' Monster Slayer. It even has Robert Englund as a monster also in the movie The Ritual. I thought was a good monster at the end of that. Okay. Let's see. It's a 262 area code says, the old cheesy black and white ones like The Attack of the Killer Shrews or The Attack of the Giant Leeches. Yeah, again, we were talking about those giant monster movies. Those are always a blast. Like Tarantula. I remember that. I remember loving that one when I was a kid with the giant tarantula. Let's see. 219 area code says, my brother-in-law's father was a producer on the movie The Incredible Melting Man. I remember The Incredible Melting Man. It's always been a joke in their family when they get together for a family gathering, and they always ask each other if they brought the crackers. Yeah, The Incredible Melting Man was a terrible movie. It was about an astronaut who went on a space mission and came back and just began melting. And it was Rick Baker, I think, did the makeup effects, if I'm not mistaken. Rick Baker did the makeup effects. And I just remember he's radioactive at this point, too, and they're trying to track him down. I can't remember if he's killing people, too, but I know he's melting. And the whole movie was just a guy with a pile of goo on his face, looking like his body is melting. And I remember they had like a Geiger counter to track him down because he was radioactive. And they were walking through the forest with the Geiger counter, and it started to go nuts. It was the radiation was going through the roof. And they passed the Geiger counter over and turn around, and hanging from the leaves in a tree was his ear. Like it had fallen off, and his ear was just hanging with goo all over it. And that's what caused the Geiger counter to go nuts. We found his ear. Because body parts were just falling off of him. It's a terrible movie. It's terrible. Well, I mean, it's called The Incredible Melting Man. That's hilarious that his brother's father-in-law was a producer. I remember Siskel and Ebert reviewed it back when it was back in the early days of the show when it was called Sneak Previews. Siskel and Ebert reviewed it and they ripped it apart. I mean, they had a great time with it. 262 area code says, a head turner man, Hercules, for real. You talking about the Hercules movies? There's lots of... Have you ever seen the Lou Ferrigno Hercules movies?
No, the only Hercules I've ever really seen is, what was it, a TV series with Kevin Sorbo?
Oh, Sorbo, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, you need to see the Lou Ferrigno Hercules movies because they're beyond bad. Like they are hilarious. They're absolutely hilarious. They're not. It's on the same level as Fever Pitch. The Ryan O'Neill gambling expose movie, which is absolutely the best worst movie I've ever seen in my life. And Hercules is on that. Both Hercules movies are on that level. The Lou Ferrigno Hercules movies they're unbelievable. They are unbelievable. And the voice that they've dubbed for Lou Ferrigno, it's like, I'm Hercules. It is It is. I mean, they seriously are hilarious movies.
Sounds remarkable.
No, they're great. I mean, these were movies that like my buddies and I would watch over and over and over again. I've seen we've seen both Hercules. We, you know, I remember we went to the theater to see Hercules 2. Hercules came out in 1983. The first, you know, Italian Hercules movie with Lou Ferrigno and the bad Sybil Danning and all this other stuff. So, and it was unbelievably bad, like hilariously bad. And all of my friends and I started to watch it on VHS. We would watch it over and over again. And then Hercules 2 came out like in 86. And we all went. I'll never forget this. We went to the Mercury Theater, no longer there. It was at North in Harlem. And we went to, there were like seven of us. And we were all at this point, like we could not believe that they made a sequel to this movie. And we were just so excited and hoping it would be as bad as the first one because it was so terrible. And we went to the Mercury Theater. We go in the theater. We're the only people in the theater. The only people. And so we were laughing and we're having a good time. The manager comes in like right before the movie starts because we were just yucking it up and having a good time. Manager comes in and goes, I'm going to have to ask you guys to quiet down. And I'm like, what, did you get a complaint from Claude Rains? Because there's nobody else in this. There's nobody else in the theater, you know. And then right before the movie started, one guy came in and sat in the back. But we still laughed our asses off. And it's as funny as the first one. These movies, seriously, they're so unbelievably bad on every single level, from writing to acting to dubbing to special effects. As bad as you can possibly be in the world of movies, and they are unbelievably entertaining.
You know, I'm opening up eBay right now.
It's they're ridiculously funny. I'm telling you,
jump to the need level.
It's the if you've not seen it, and guys listening, if you're a fan of watching horrible movies that are so bad they're funny, these two Hercules movies with Lou Ferrigno from the 80s should be way at the top of your list. If you wanted to have a bad movie night to just laugh your butt off in front of a TV, I can't recommend the two Lou Ferrigno Hercules movies more. Are they available?
Yeah. Oh, man, they're like $20 a pop, though.
Well, it's because they're not, you know, there's not a whole call. There's not a...
Yeah,
there's not a lot of call for that movie.
That's the Blu-ray releases. I don't necessarily.
They actually released it on Blu-ray?
Hell yeah. They'll release literally anything on Blu-ray, man. You can get a special edition of Driller Killer.
Oh, man.
Which I need.
I can't believe that there's a Blu-ray edition of the Hercules movies with Lou Ferrigno. Unbelievable.
I do want to see these rippling muscles in HD.
Well,
I won't take
I'm telling you, you're going to laugh. I mean, to tears like pouring down the side of your face. I'm telling you, they're that funny. They're so horrible that they're that funny. Everything is inept. Every single element, every frame is inept in both of those movies. Unbelievable.
Well, at least they have a 100% guarantee.
Oh, good. Here's a classic monster movie, The Day of the Triffids. That's a really scary movie about giant man-eating plants bioengineered by USSR. That's a really cool movie.
Day of the Triffids?
Day of the Triffids.
All right.
They include Swamp Thing on here. Wes Craven's Swamp Thing made the list. I was not a fan of the movie. I enjoyed watching Adrian Barbeau in it, but I didn't think the movie was that great.
It's getting a TV. It's getting a streaming series.
I know. I saw the trailer for it.
Looks pretty cool.
Looks really cool.
Because I like the character. Character's cool.
Well, the character's been around for so long, and I just thought Wes Craven was shooting for a tone that didn't work. And the trailer for the TV series looks really dark and pretty scary.
Seems more like the Alan Moore run on the comic book character.
Yeah. But I mean the Wes Craven version was tried to be sort of like light campy comic book stuff. And like I said, it was fine to just watch Adrian Barbeau. That was the only thing about that movie. Okay, let's take a quick break and then we'll talk a little bit more about monster movies. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
Nervous, she was sure that nothing could go wrong. So we played along every morning, 8 a.m. She got him out the door. He kissed her like a chore. Daily execution of this passionless.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday! One artist, three songs. Who requested that?
That was Squat. Wanted to hear a little band called The Empty Pockets.
Yes, they are. They've been on this show many times.
Really?
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah, local band, and they've been on the show. I want to say they've been on the show 3-4 times.
Wow.
I'm going to have to look them up because I was actually getting into that too.
Oh, they're great. They've performed live here in studio. They've been on the show, I think, 4 times. Wow. They also were the house band for the last 2 years on the Steve and Johnny Cheap Date New Year's Eve show. When Steve and Johnny host New Year's Eve here.
You know what? Yeah. They sound familiar.
They were the house band for 2 years straight. They've been on Patty's show, I think. I think they were on Patty's show. I was the first one to have them on, though. I want to take credit for that.
I was the first
one to have them on, and they're really cool. And they're a great group of people, and they're really talented. And they've been on the show. And normally when we have like a musical act or a live band in, we normally do about an hour with them. You know, they're usually on for about an hour. They were on the first time we had them on. They were on for 2.5 hours. We had them in for because we were having so much fun. We were having such a great conversation, and their music was so good that they stuck around. And we had them on for like for 2.5 hours. And they've been back since, and they've become, you know, a pretty popular band here at GN on several shows. So, all right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about the best monster movies ever made. And in honor of the Loch Ness Monster having his first day of the first sighting was on this date in 1933. So here's Harold on WGN. Go ahead, Harold.
Hey, what's going on, Nick? Frankenstein, Boris Karloff. My favorite Frankenstein. Favorite mummy is Christopher Lee in The Mummy.
Yeah, the Hammer version of The Mummy is pretty great.
It's pretty great, yeah. But, it was Michael Myers back in 1960.
Yeah. Frankenstein is, as you know, Harold, if you were listening, Svengoolie's showing 4 Frankenstein movies in May. So he's showing the first one, he's showing Bride, he's showing Abbott and Costello Meet, and he's showing Ghost of. So there you go. All right, Harold, thanks for the call. Frankenstein. That's how the whole thing basically started. All right, we got more texts coming in. 309 area code says Chud. I love Chud. I love Chud, and I love that. I did not know this until Eric told us when we were reviewing Us. There's clearly a Chud influence in the movie. I know that sounds weird, but there is. And at the beginning of the movie, the opening shot of the movie is like the beginning of the movie takes place in the 80s. And it's a TV with a bunch of VHS tapes next to it. And the first tape that's next to the TV in the character's house is Chud. And then we were told, informed that Jordan Peele's first girlfriend, his first girlfriend's father directed Chud, which I just think is a fantastic. Now, did you see Chud 2, Bud the Chud? You've not seen Chud 2, Bud the Chud? Bud the Chud. Chud 2, Bud the Chud. Not good. But I like the first one.
Oh, the first one's great.
Yeah, I love the first one.
I love Daniel Stern in it.
Yeah. 312 area code, legendary monster movie, Creature from the Black Lagoon, which we talked about with Rich Coase a little bit earlier. By the way, if you missed my interview with Rich, talking about the 40 years of him playing Svengoolie and talking about the entire month of Frankenstein movies, it'll be up in the morning, a little bit later on. It'll be up in the morning as a podcast, and you should check it out because it's always great to talk to Rich Coase. But yeah, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Classic. Doc says, Nick, have you Nick, have you seen the movie have you seen the movie Teeth? Doc asks. Yes, Doc, I've seen the movie Teeth. Tom, have you seen the movie Teeth?
Yeah, that was kind of a big deal because that came out when I was a teenager.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so that was kind of a big deal for everybody. We're like, oh, man, this is going to be so cool. It's going to be so crazy.
Vagina Dentata is the scariest monster of all, according to Doc. It's pretty scary. I like that movie. I think that movie's really good. I can't remember the female lead's name, but she's really good in it. It's a really good performance.
They definitely just they go for it.
Yeah.
No, it's disturbing on a lot of levels outside of the teeth part of it.
Yeah. 224 area code says, Invasion of the Body Snatcher scared the hell out of me when I was a kid. I've mentioned this before. I like every version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I don't think there's a bad version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
You're going to look me in the eyes and tell me the Nicole Kidman...
Yes, I like Invasion.
Or not Nicole Kidman.
It is. Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig.
I always confuse her with Naomi Watts.
They're best friends, too.
Yeah.
I like
Come
Invasion.
On,
I do. I like it. The Abel Ferrara version from 93, Body Snatchers. Have you not?
No, I've seen that one, yeah.
With Meg Tilly?
I think that one is
Where are you
going to
go? Where are you going to hide? Because there's no one left like you. That movie is awesome.
It's good. It's a very good adaptation.
I love it. I love it. And the 78 version with Donald Sutherland is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one with Kevin McCarthy is a classic.
Yeah. I honestly, out of all of them, preferred the original. But with the one from the 50s.
Yeah.
I think it's like untouchable. The one with Donald Sutherland and a very young Jeff Goldblum.
The one with Sutherland is really scary. Like really creepy.
The director's from Chicago.
Kaufman. Philip Kaufman.
Yeah.
Directed. Is he from Chicago?
I want to check.
He directed The Right Stuff. He directed.
I'm gonna check real quick. But okay. Yeah, because I know he directed The Right Stuff. Very talented guy.
Yeah. No, he's directed a lot of good movies. But I like all of them. I like all of them. And they all do a different take on it, too. There's a completely different. It's the same, story, but they do a completely different take and a completely different tone, all four of them.
Yeah. And Philip Kaufman, born in Chicago, Illinois, in 1936.
Okay. I didn't know he was from Chicago. But yeah, I like all of them. Body Snatchers, the Abel Ferrara one is really creepy. Like, it's really, really creepy. And Meg Tilly is great in it. She's so scary in it. 807 area code says, how about Vincent D'Onofrio in Men in Black? He was great. Well, that is a great performance.
Yeah.
That is a really, really great physical performance. He's terrific in that movie. He's really funny in it.
Water.
Yeah.
Sugar. More.
Yeah.
That freaked me out as a kid.
Yeah. Well, no. I can see that. And then now there's a franchise that went on to suck.
Yeah.
Because the first one's really great. Second one sucked. Third one sucked. This new one looks terrible.
I saw the trailer for it, and I'm just like, just stop. It looks terrible.
Despite the fact that like half of the cast of Avengers is in it, but it just looks. I mean, it looks awful. All right, some of the other ones that Rolling Stone says are great monster movies. Jaws. You can't make a list of great monster movies and not include Jaws, the quintessential monster movie. They include Toxic Avenger.
Nice. Nice.
Old Toxie. Creature from the Black Lagoon gets mentioned. They have The Fly, but they have The Fly from 1958, not from 1986. Seems weird to me. If you're going to include The Mummy, the original Mummy, in the 1999 version of The Mummy, you should also probably...
Dubious.
...include the remake, which is better than the original.
Yeah, of course.
They mention Alien and Aliens. Well, actually, all the Alien movies have a great monster in them.
Yeah. And I would like to throw a shout out to the dog alien from Alien 3.
Well,
underrated.
I like all the Alien movies. I even like Resurrection. I like them all. I could watch all four of them. I have no problem with them.
Totally.
So, do we have a weather?
Momentarily.
Okay. So Alien is mentioned here, and then The Wolfman from 1941, which is probably my favorite. It's not the scariest, but I think it's the Wolfman is definitely my favorite of the Universal movies and definitely my favorite Universal monster. I love The Wolfman. I used to walk around the house when I was a little kid. I used to walk around the house on my tiptoes.
What's your read on the Guillermo, or not Guillermo, what am I saying? Benicio del Toro.
Love it. I love it. I thought it was great. Made a dollar at the box office, but I thought it was really great, and I thought the effects were really good. But yeah, I used to tiptoe around the house like the Wolfman. And of course, we mentioned here Frankenstein. The granddaddy of Maul, King Kong, you know, I didn't like the 1976 version with Jessica Lange and Jeff Bridges. I like Jeff Bridges' beard. I thought Jeff Bridges' beard was pretty impressive. But I love the Peter Jackson version from 2005. I love that.
Yeah.
And the first one is just, you know, I mean, the first one, the thing about that movie was released in 1933. By the way, the same year that Loch Ness Monster was first spotted. Coincidence? I don't think so. So that
they've inspired it.
That movie came out in 1933, and you could watch that right now, the original 1933 version of King Kong. You could watch it right now, and it holds up to any adventure movie that's being made today. Without question. I mean, it is without question one of the greatest and most exciting adventure movies ever made, and made in 1933 and still as good today as it was back then. But they also pick at the top of the list Godzilla from 1954, the original Godzilla. The movie that set the standard for creature features to come. More than a dozen sequels would follow, but none can match the 1954 classic in which a reptilian mutant the size of a skyscraper tears through urban Japan. Besides symbolically touching on the country's all-too-recent relationship with nuclear devastation, Godzilla debuted on what has become the most iconic monster to grace the big screen. Yeah, and now we got a new Godzilla movie. Since we're talking about monster movies, Godzilla will always be the best. And the new Godzilla movie looks fantastic, and I'm very excited about it. So those are classic monster movies. And there you go. All right, we are going to break here for the weather. And when we come back, we've got some crazy celebrity feuds and some surprising celebrity feuds that existed. We'll talk a little bit about that. And if you know about any celebrity feuds that you found interesting over the years, there have been plenty. Give us a call or give us a text. That's the next topic we're going to jump into. We'd love to hear from you on celebrity feuds. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Welcome back, everybody. That's the Empty Pockets, a local band, been on the show a few times. Really good band, and that's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up later on, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. Okay, we're going to talk about some celebrity feuds that maybe you had no idea that some of these celebrities were in bitter feuds. And it's always fun to watch these kind of feuds. I mean, they made a whole series out of it. Ryan Murphy made a whole series out of the feud between Joan Crawford and Bette Davis. And it was really entertaining and really, really good and really a lot of fun. And they really did have a bitter feud for a very long time. They pretty much hated each other. But they still exist. And if you guys know of any celebrity feuds from the past or the present that you find entertaining or surprising, call us or text us right now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's what it says. Celebrities are just like regular people, only way more dramatic because of their flair for the over-the-top. They are constantly involving themselves in bizarre, hilariously pointless feuds. This is Cracked.com. We dug up some examples of truly spectacular yet epically dumb feuds among very famous people. So now you can feel better about arguing about Star Wars online. Just kidding. You should still feel dumb about that. So, famous celebrity feuds, 312-981-7200. If you would like to join us. Here's the first one. LL Cool J and Jamie Foxx. There's a bitter feud going on with those guys. LL Cool J, Jamie Foxx had a fist fight during the shoot of Any Given Sunday. Things got heated between them when they got too excited during a fight scene between their characters. It ended with LL Cool J punching Foxx out cold. Foxx then later pressed assault charges. I don't remember anything about Any Given Sunday except Al Pacino screaming. That's the only thing that
That's the main draw.
It's the only thing that I remember about that movie. I remember hating it. I don't remember the fight scene between Jamie Foxx and LL Cool J. To be quite frank with you, I don't even remember LL Cool J in it. I remember Jamie Foxx is in it. Cameron Diaz.
It's been a really long time since.
Anne Margaret, I think, is in it. That's Oliver Stone. So I, you know,
not exactly your favorite.
No. Let's see. So I didn't know that. So Jamie Foxx filed charges.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. How about this one? When Chloe Grace Moretz chastised Kim Kardashian for posing nude on Instagram, Kardashian clapped back, tweeting, quote, "Let's all welcome at Chloe G. Moretz to Twitter since no one knows who she is. Your nylon cover is cute, boo." Moretz was almost nude in said cover photo. According to Moretz, she laughed about it, but her mom, quote, "took the most offense of it because it was girl on girl hate, and Kim didn't come back with an educated response on body confidence." I guess because I'm not on Instagram. I mean, I have an Instagram account, but I never do anything with it. But I didn't know that. I would certainly side with Chloe Grace Moretz any day over Kim Kardashian. That's just weird. Chloe Grace Moretz, man, I think she's great. But the first time I saw her in Kick-Ass, I was like, okay. Oh, she's in 500 Days of Summer too. That was a
wait. Where is
she's
she?
She's Joseph Gordon-Levitt's little sister.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's been a while since I've seen that.
She's in that. She was in the Amityville Horror remake. You know, she's done a lot of remakes of horror movies that don't need remakes.
Mm-hmm.
Although I love Suspiria. She's in that. She's in Amityville Horror. She's in Let Me In, which was one of the most unnecessary remakes ever. And she's in Carrie. She's done... she might go down in history as being known mostly for doing unnecessary horror remakes.
Which is a shame.
No, she's great,
though. She's very talented.
She's incredibly talented. She's incredibly talented. And I really like her. I always have. Always have. So, obviously, there's a little feud right there. Chloe Grace Moretz and Kim Kardashian. Just a weird combination. I wouldn't even see I don't even picture those two people living in the same universe. Here's Michael on WGN. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Nick. How are you this morning?
All right.
Celebrity feud. Johnny Carson and Joan Rivers.
Yeah. Yeah, that was sad. That was really sad because they were so close and she was, you know, his go-to guest host for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think when Jay Leno took over The Tonight Show after Johnny Carson retired, I believe he continued the feud, so to say, and he did not have Joan Rivers on the show out of respect to Johnny.
Oh, no, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. Well, what happened was, for people who might not know, Joan Rivers took a gig. I think it was on Fox. I think
it bombed completely.
It did. And she took a late night gig on Fox, and Johnny felt betrayed because, you know, he was very loyal to her, and then now she's going to be on opposite him. And so so he said he never had her back on the show. He wouldn't speak to her, would not explain anything to her. They never spoke. I don't think they spoke right before he died. I don't even think they spoke before he died.
I wondered that, like, because it started like sometime in like the mid 80s or late 80s.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they ever had a chance to reconcile before he passed away.
I don't think they did, and I think I remember seeing an interview or reading an interview with Joan Rivers after his death that said that she regretted not being able to have closure with him before he passed. So
yeah, I can imagine she probably would have.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And she's gone now too, which is really sad. So
yeah.
All right, Michael. Thanks, buddy.
By the way, I just wanted to share that with you, Nick.
Thanks, man. Take care. Yeah, Johnny Carson, Joan Rivers, a bitter feud, big time feud. Lots of celebrities have had these, and that's what we're talking about here. 312-981-7200. So yeah, let's get into that for talk and text. All right, the news is coming up right after this.
Every day, all her life, loved the sound of her voice bouncing off the mountain range down into the valleys. So she stayed.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, as we are every weekday morning. I'm here from 1 to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich follows with the opening bell and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. That, again, was the Empty Pockets on Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text as well. So we are talking about bitter celebrity feuds. And there have been so many of them over the years. Some are really dumb and some are just stupid, but they're fun to talk about. And we've got a bunch of them here. And we're getting some texts from you guys detailing some more of the remembering some of these other celebrity feuds. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 765 area code says Phil and Don Everly, Simon and Garfunkel, Ray and Dave Davies, and Chris and Rich Robinson. We talked about those before. And Ann and Nancy Wilson. Ann and Nancy Wilson had a feud? They did?
I don't know much about the inner workings of Hart.
I didn't know about that. That makes me sad. Because I love Hart. 815 area code. Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. Yeah, I mean, it got to the point when they broke up. You know, they never spoke to each other again until Frank Sinatra famously brought Dino on to the telethon. And it was 20 years after they broke up, because they broke up in like 56, I think, or 57 or something like that. And then it was 1977 when Dean Martin showed up at the telethon. It was the first time they were together on stage, first time they spoke in all those years. It's a fantastic television moment, though. I mean, it's one of my favorite moments of all time, because I mean, I worship Jerry Lewis and I love Dean Martin, and they were the most successful, you know, two-man team ever. I mean, it was just people would line up, fill up the streets in New York, like thousands of people would be standing in the street waiting for them to come out of there after they would do shows. And their movies were incredibly successful. Jerry was getting all the towards the end of their partnership, Jerry was getting all of the attention. And Dean was sick of it. He was really tired of it. And then Jerry, of course, went on to a major, amazing solo career. And so did Dean. They each went their, you know, respective ways, but they didn't speak until that moment. And then, they talked a little bit more after that. So they did actually have closure before Dino died.
Which is what you can hope for.
Yeah. Jay says, hey, Nick, Sally Field and John Davidson of the Girl with Something Extra TV show did not like each other, according to her book In Pieces. Sally Field and John Davidson? What? That's a little weird. Zach says, oh, my God, Dave Mustaine and Metallica. Says, talk about a 35-year-old feud. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad they kicked him out.
Yeah. But, I mean, it has not ended. It's still to this day.
No.
It's just not ended. Bart Simpson and Sideshow Bob. That's what Carrie says. I guess they're celebrities even if they're not real. Well, he's trying to kill Bart.
A feud is a feud.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments is when they cast David Hyde Pierce as his brother, as Sideshow Bob's brother. And then, is it Bart who jumps on his back and covers his eyes? Yeah, or it's Bart or Lisa jumps on his back and covers his eyes, and he goes, Maris? All right, how about this? In 2014, rapper T.I. once started a fight with boxer Floyd Mayweather at a Fatburger chain. Because why would you start a fight with Floyd Mayweather? The guy's a professional boxer.
Undefeated.
At a Fatburger chain because he was suspicious that his wife, Tiny, may have been having an affair with Mayweather. Mayweather has been friends with Tiny even before T.I. came into the picture, and he clarified that he never had any sexual relationship with her, but he knew her. Despite this, T.I. continued the bad blood and dissing the boxer in a song this year. I don't know about this. I would not want to have a feud with Floyd Mayweather. I would choose to have a feud.
Yeah, I'd let that one just have to let that one slide.
I love them. It's a fat burger. How about this? Cher does not like Madonna because she thinks she's a rude, spoiled brat. She has publicly thrown shade at Madonna, calling her a bitch, said that she's not beautiful, and suggested that she should be less of a less of a C word. Good God, Cher. Wow. Now, in this feud, I'd side with Madonna because I adore her. But I'm sure she is a spoiled, rotten brat. I have no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, but I don't see how Cher is like so much better.
Yeah,
you know, Cher has the advantage of just being more experienced.
And been around longer.
And, you know, I'm sure when she was in her 20s and 30s, yeah, she wasn't exactly a peach.
I would guess, you know, well, Madonna's almost 60 now.
Wow.
Yeah. So, she and Cher, what's funny is that this is a feud. I would imagine the gay community was very upset about this feud. I don't know who would they side with. They're both icons. You know what I mean? Good thing Barbara Streisand wasn't involved. It would have been the end of the world.
A bloodbath.
Celebrity feuds is what we're talking about. 312-981-7200. You say celebrity feud, and I immediately think of Kenan Thompson being Steve Harvey on Celebrity Family Feud.
Yep.
On SNL. You like my suit, player? The buttons are from Italy. Did you watch the episode where Chance the Rapper was host and musical guest? Did you watch that episode?
I did, yeah.
He was unbelievable.
He's very good.
He was unbelievable. Really, and he was like the son that he knew that he never had. And he was basically like, "How you doing, player?" And that was a really strong episode. He was really funny. And my favorite sketch in that episode, a very, very strong episode, my favorite sketch was when he was the ESPN reporter covering hockey and basically talking about how black people don't know hockey. And he's like, you know what they say, let's do that hockey, when he was trying to pretend that he knew about hockey, but he didn't. That I thought was brilliant. Brilliant.
I might have that stuck in my head the rest of the day. You like my suit, player?
Yeah, you like my suit, player? The buttons are from Italy. This is my personal mustache groomer. Kenan Thompson, by the way, is a national treasure. He's a national treasure. He's broken the record now for being on SNL the longest in history.
I remember watching him on All That on Nickelodeon.
Oh, yeah, man.
SNL for kids.
And you know what was funny? It was that, you know, like, he, it took a long time for him to get respect. He was like the butt of a lot of jokes his first few years on SNL. And I always thought he was funny. But now, finally, people are like, oh, he's been on for 16 seasons. Maybe we ought to, you know, 17 seasons, I think. This is his 17th season. So
that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Here's Donna on WGN. Hi, Donna.
Hi. Good morning. How about Rosie O'Donnell and Donald Trump?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Rosie O'Donnell and Donald Trump. That was a big one.
And it's still going on.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, at this point, Donald Trump has so many other people that he's in.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of feuds going on with the White House right now. All right, Donna, thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Rosie O'Donnell. That was a big one. Rosie O'Donnell and Trump. I don't know. All right. We're talking about celebrity feuds. Player, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. We've got a bunch more here. If you want to talk and text for celebrity feuds that are memorable that you remember, 312-981-7200. Here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. A flash flood watch is effective until 5 p.m. Cloudy, damp, and cool today. Showers spread into the area from the southwest. We'll have a few embedded thunderstorms. The highs will range from the 40s along the lakefront to the 50s in the inland. For tomorrow, in the morning, highs between 55 and 60. Cooler readings at the lakefront due to easterly winds. There will be a clouding over at night, a chance of light rain, mainly in the southern portions. Saturday, clouds early, then becoming mostly sunny, high between 65 and 70, a little cooler near the lake, partly cloudy skies overnight. For Sunday, partly cloudy skies, seasonably mild, highs around 70. And for Monday, a mix of sun and clouds with a slight chance of showers. The winds will pick up out of the southwest, bringing warmer temperatures in the afternoon, a highs to low to mid-70s. Currently 42 degrees at O'Hare. 45 degrees at Midway, 41 at the lakefront. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll dive right back in. If you got a text or a call for us, it's 312-981-7200. And we are talking about usually pretty dumb, maybe some memorable celebrity feuds right here on WGN.
Well, I guess it would be nice.
Yes. I love George Michael. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. Who requested the George Michael?
That was our good pal Ike.
Ike. All right. There you go.
Coming in clutch.
Okay, cool. We are back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, where it's very foggy up here, 18 stories above downtown Chicago. And we are live. We have been talking about celebrity feuds, some bitter celebrity feuds. Where there are celebrities, there are feuds. Playa, and we're discussing those right now. 708 area code says Bill Murray and Chevy Chase on Caddyshack. They had to shoot their scene separately. Well, no, because they weren't in any scenes together except for one, and they were on the set together, and it was very tense, and it's a very long scene. It's just between the two of them. But, yeah, there was a big feud between them that started when Chevy Chase, Chevy Chase has had feuds with everybody. Like, if you're talking celebrity feuds, you know, Dan Harmon had a massive feud with him, creator of Community.
Yeah, and Dan Harmon was in the right, 100%.
Of course he was.
Got it.
Everybody who had a feud with Chevy Chase was in the right.
Yeah. What's his deal?
He's a jerk.
I just don't get it though. Why be that way?
I don't really understand. But I mean, I've read every book about Saturday Night Live. Every book ever written about Saturday Night Live. The best, obviously, is Live from New York. That's kind of the Bible. And in every account of Saturday Night Live, he comes off as one of the biggest jerks that you could possibly imagine. And his feud with Bill Murray was legendary because Chevy Chase came back to host the show, and Bill Murray was hired to replace Chevy Chase when Chevy Chase left after the first season. So they bring Chevy Chase back to host the show, and he's acting like a complete diva. you know, treating the cast like they're nobodies and he's a big movie star.
They're little people.
And he and Bill Murray was, but the thing is, Bill Murray was goaded to get into a fight with him, and they were going to throw hands and get into like a physical altercation. And that was all Belushi's doing. That was all Belushi's doing. Belushi told Bill Murray that Chevy Chase said this about him and said that about him, and Bill Murray was, or John Belushi was encouraging Bill Murray to go after Chevy Chase. And I've talked about this before, but at the end of that episode, the first time Chevy Chase came back to host, at the end of the episode during the goodbyes, and the goodbyes are always, Molly Shannon once told me to always watch the goodbyes, and I do every single time. At the very end, when everybody's on stage and they're saying their goodbyes and everything, if you watch that episode, Bill Murray has to be held back. Like, he looks like he's going after Chevy Chase, and they're holding him back. But if you look at John Belushi, he's laughing his ass off. Isn't John Belushi?
Who's the bigger jerk then?
would Belushi like to stir the pot? You know what
he
mean?
Did. He did. Yeah, he really brought fear onto the show.
He did. It was his idea, and he helped wreck the joint. Alan Alda and Gary Berghoff. Hawkeye and Radar had a feud.
I could see that.
Peter Griffin and the chicken. Funny every time.
No, my dad, until the day he died, absolutely loved that bit. He thought it was so funny.
It's funny. It's funny. Stephen Gary, that's a big one. That's a real big one. God, I used to listen to Stephen Gary all the time. All the time. Steve Dahl, one of my radio heroes, without question. Madonna and Elton John. Madonna is jealous of Lady Gaga, and Elton John adores her and thinks she's the most talented and sings better than Madonna. Well, you know, I mean, maybe Madonna's a little bit jealous of the success that Lady Gaga has, but Lady Gaga should just cut checks to Madonna. Like, Lady Gaga is like a second-rate Madonna. You know?
Well, I mean, I feel like she's ascended a little bit better than second-rate.
I was not a fan at all of Lady Gaga at all until I saw the movie last year, because I really think she's great in the movie, and I like Shallow, and she's very good in the film. The first time I've ever liked anything that Lady Gaga has ever done was Star Is Born. But you listen to Born That Way. Or Born This Way, what the hell's
it called? Yeah, Born This Way.
Born This Way. It's Express Yourself. It's exactly Madonna's Express Yourself. It's the same exact song. And she has grown, obviously, as an artist over the years.
Sure.
But when she first came on the scene, I'm like, you know what? I already have Madonna. Thank you.
Right. She was huge when I was in high school.
Yeah.
When The Fame came out. Wow.
When wearing meat suits and stuff.
That's punk rock as hell. I'm going to say it right now. That's super awesome.
Yeah, I just was never a fan. I think she's great in A Star Is Born. And, you know, she's got a good voice. And I love Shallow. And I like all the songs in A Star Is Born. But that was the first time I ever liked her. Tom Hanks and Henry Winkler. You were researching this. What the hell happened between Tom Hanks and Henry Winkler? Two of the nicest guys in Hollywood.
So believe it or not, there's an actual full list of celebrities who have had problems with Tom Hanks.
Oh, well, I'm sure that's the thing, because he's got that reputation as, like, you know,
being the nicest.
Clearly,
dude.
He's the nicest guy on the planet, you know.
But apparently, Henry Winkler and Tom Hanks' beef started out on the set of Turner and Hooch.
Is Henry Winkler in Turner?
No, he was supposed to direct it.
Oh.
And then him and Hanks had a falling out, and then Tom Hanks was like, he's not directing this movie, so then he didn't.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Had him taken off the set.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
According to this. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to remember who the director of Turner and Hooch is. Roger Spottiswood? Is it Roger Spottiswood?
Yep.
Okay.
God, wow.
I can't believe I knew that.
Who knows that?
No, because I like Roger Spottiswood, and I remember, I just kind of remember it being Spottiswood.
I haven't seen it yet.
Hello. Hold on a second. Someone had their Henny Youngman juice this morning.
All right.
He's directed a lot of really good movies. including my favorite sports movie of all time. He directed North Dallas 40.
Oh, wow.
You know? And I remember thinking that, wow, that's a really unusual.
He's a co-writer on 48 Hours.
Yeah. No, he's the deal. And
Shoot to Kill.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was a real unusual movie for him to be a part of. I remember going, why would he direct a wacky comedy about a guy and his dog with Tom Hanks?
From the director of Terror Train.
Yeah, exactly. The director of Terror Train. Wow. All right, how about this one? You wouldn't think starring in commercials was high stakes enough to spark a feud, but TV pitchman Billy Mays was often known for getting pissed off at all the mentions of Vince Offer's ShamWow, a product suspiciously similar to Billy Mays' own Zorbies, with suspiciously similar marketing. He called Offer a one-hit wonder, but Offer also found success with the Slap Chop, which bears its own set of suspicious similarities to Billy Mays' Quick Chop. Vince Offer. Oh, you're going to like my nuts. Remember the Slap Chop commercial? Yeah. Oh, you're going to like my nuts.
That's why that guy was a legend. Not, it wasn't the products, it was him.
Yeah, and then the prostitutes they found in his hotel room.
True.
All right, we got a break here, and more celebrity feuds coming up. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. News is right after this. I love George Michael. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! And that, of course, is I Want Your Sex. Every George Michael reference in Keanu, hilarious. Every time. I just love, and they never heard from Ridgely again. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. We're talking about celebrity feuds. And if you would like to join us, what are some of the more memorable ones? And most of them are just dumb. But we've got a few of them. I was surprised about the Tom Hanks-Henry Winkler feud. Surprising. Because, reputations of two of the nicest guys on the planet. They didn't get along. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text for celebrity feuds. How about this one? Now, I'm not familiar with this because I never watched the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So I'm not familiar with this. Will Smith and Janet Hubert had such a rocky relationship behind the scenes of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air that she blamed him for her getting fired from the show. I've never watched The Fresh Prince, so I don't know who she is. After she got, did you watch Fresh Prince?
Yeah, I think she was Aunt Viv, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
After she got fired, Smith allegedly made some comments insinuating that Hubert wanted the show to be centered around her and her would-be and would be bitter towards him regardless of his actions. Over 15 years later, Hubert wasn't done feuding. She said she'd never have a reunion with, quote, an a-hole like Will Smith.
The Fresh Prince.
Oh, man.
But Willennium.
Yeah. Willennium. When Pink and Christina Aguilera worked together on Lady Marmalade, the record label treated Aguilera like royalty and Pink like trash. So Pink started a beef, and it got so bad that Aguilera attacked her in a nightclub. I do remember that. About 15 years later, after they became moms, they quote-unquote hugged it out. Who do I side with on that one? Pink, by far.
Yeah.
She's
had the longevity.
I love Pink. I love Pink. I think she's great. She was on Kimmel last night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I got it on my DVR.
I wonder, did she got a new record or something?
I think she does, yeah.
Oh, great.
She's the musical performer, you know. But, yeah, I know. I have always liked Pink.
Yeah.
Always. Always. Adam Levine was a total ass toward Lady Gaga on Twitter. Boy, Lady Gaga getting into a few here. Levine dissed her song Applause by saying, ugh, recycling old art for a younger generation doesn't make you an artist.
Okay.
This is coming from Adam Levine. Gaga replied to the criticism by tweeting, uh-oh, guys, the art police are here. The oh-so-mature Levine then chose to respond with the old internet standby, while we're at it, we should call the grammar police. because there was a grammar issue in her tweet.
Oh, no.
Yeah. See, now here's one of the few times I would side with Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
Because it's Adam Levine.
Like one of the biggest tools of all time.
Oh, my God. All right. Here's Tony on WGN. Hi, Tony.
Yo, Nick, what's up, man?
Hey, man.
I can't complain. I got one for you. The Supremes.
Yeah.
Florence Ballard and Diana Ross.
Yep. Because Diana got all the attention, man.
And yeah, she got top billing on that one,
man. She did, because they started out just as the Supremes, but then it was Diana Ross and the Supremes. And the rest of the Supremes were not happy about that.
No, they weren't. I mean, Mary Wilson, she stayed neutral in it, but she was more partial to Florence on that one, man, because she felt that Barry and Diana were trying to squeeze her out.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That totally makes sense. That's a good one, Tony. That's a classic one.
Yeah, definitely a classic.
All right, buddy. Have a good day, man.
All right, man.
See ya. That's Tony. Len sends in one. Feuds, Roger Waters and David Gilmour. My God.
Team Gilmour.
Oh, no. I'm Team Waters.
Of course you are.
I'm Team Waters. But I love David Gilmour.
Yeah.
I love him. But we've talked about this before.
Yeah. Let's go listen to the Division Bell sometime. I think you'll really enjoy it.
No, it's all right. Heather Locklear and Heather Thomas were feuding for years. Because I guess they were fighting for the same fan base, and considering that their first names were both Heather, I guess that was the... Sinead O'Connor and the Pope. See, that's not a feud. I don't even think the Pope was aware of what happened. You know what I mean? He doesn't know. The Pope didn't know who Sinead O'Connor was at that time. There's no way.
Was that John Paul II?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't know who Sinead was. That's not a feud.
Very one-sided feud.
Somebody told the Pope, you know, this bald woman on American television tore up a picture of you, and he probably went, yeah, whatever.
Wouldn't be the first time, won't be the last.
Now, this one just seems really weird to me. This was a text that's been sent to us. A 312 area code says, Bruce Valanche and Chuck Norris had a beef with each other. What? Bruce Valanche and Chuck Norris? How would those two, how would there be a feud between those two guys? How do they even cross paths? I don't even understand how Bruce Valanche and Chuck Norris would be in the same hemisphere, let alone have a feud. That just seems weird. Can we find anything on this?
You know, I'm doing a little half-assed internet research right now. It is tough to verify that.
Okay. Well, if the 312 person in the area could have 312, tell us what this beef was, because it just doesn't seem possible for Bruce Valanche and Chuck Norris to have a beef.
This is comedian Bruce Valanche, correct?
Yeah.
Comedy writer.
Yeah, Bruce Valanche.
What?
Yeah. There's only one Bruce Valanche. It's that big fat guy with the beard who was on Hollywood Squares, and he wrote jokes for the Oscars. He did, you know. Then he was in, if I'm not mistaken, I think he shaved off the beard and he was in Hairspray to do Hairspray. I just don't understand. I don't get it. We can find out any details about the beef between, this is very important. This is very, very, very important breaking news that we need to cover here. Bruce Valanche versus Chuck Norris. How about this one? For most of their career in the Ramones, Joey and Johnny hated each other. They were never close, but things were ruined completely when Johnny had an affair with Joey's girlfriend, Linda. They never mended fences. Even when Joey was on his deathbed, Marky Ramone urged Johnny to see him, but Johnny stonewalled him, saying he's not my friend. That's really sad.
That's depressing.
All right, how about this one? Our beloved Iron Man got into a little feud here. As soon as Robert Downey Jr. met Hugh Grant on the set of Restoration, he hated him. RD, as Key and Peele's Robert Downey Jr.'s as Key and Peele refer to him as, RJ Squared. RJ Squared wanted to kill him on site for no reason, leaving Grant, quote unquote, so hurt. After over 20 years, RJ Squared offered to bury the hatchet. I wonder why he hated, why did he hate Hugh Grant?
I don't know.
That movie sucked, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Restoration.
And RDJ and Terrence Howard.
Oh, yeah, we got him fired.
Well,
he got him fired.
Well, and he also didn't like the director. Oh, my God.
Favreau?
Yeah, him and Favreau didn't super get along. Not RDJ, but
Terrence Howard. I was going to say, because, you know, he's actually coming to town.
Yeah.
They're doing an interview. Jon Favreau is doing an interview with RD Squared. Yeah. Well, there was that period of time where Robert Downey Jr. was having some issues, man.
Yeah. You know?
And 2008 was a big year for him.
Mm-hmm. He was finally off the schneef.
It was Iron Man and Tropic Thunder. Came out the same year. He got an Oscar nomination for Tropic Thunder. But personally, I think the first step in that comeback was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I love that movie. Speaking of Shane Black, love that movie.
It's his best. It's the best script he's ever written.
It's
incredible.
It's great. It's such a great movie. I thought that movie was good. I also love I love Shane Black, but I also love he did the Nice Guys, right, with Ryan Gosling, and I love that movie too.
I'm going to break your rotator cuff.
I love that movie. I think that movie is fantastic. Fantastic. The only movie that he did that I like Iron Man 3.
Yeah, Iron Man 3 higher rated than the second one, that's for sure.
I don't like, here's the ones that I don't like. I don't like Lethal Weapon, and I don't like Last Boy Scout. Like the two that everybody, I thought Last Boy Scout's one of the stupidest movies I've ever
seen. I don't like the Last Boy Scout, but not even Lethal Weapon?
No. Not a Lethal Weapon guy at all. At all.
Oh, I dig Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
All four of them.
Yeah, I can't even go there, man. Yeah.
What is it? Just Mel Gibson or?
No, I like Mel Gibson.
You like him in it?
Well, he's very good in the first Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
I just thought the movie was derivative, and I thought Richard Donner didn't direct the action at all well. I mean, and even Gary Busey is in it, and I didn't like it. But I thought that, like, the fight scenes, you couldn't see what was going on in the fight scenes, didn't think the chases or anything or the action was particularly exciting. And what was supposed to be this fantastic chemistry between him and Danny Glover, I think, is non-existent.
I really like Lethal Weapon 2.
Everybody loves Lethal Weapon 2. I don't like any of them.
Don't like any of them.
No, I don't like any of the Lethal Weapon movies.
I would always point towards Lethal Weapon 2.
But as far as Shane Black goes, he's written some stuff that I really, really love.
Yeah.
But the one that he's most known for is the one that he's best remembered for, will be Lethal Weapon. And that's I like Iron Man 3 better than Lethal Weapon. But Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is fantastic.
That is best.
So, all right, we got to take a break here. And we got more celebrity feuds. And if you would like to join us, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're talking about silly and fun and dumb celebrity bitter feuds. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. That wraps up Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! And, of course, that's George Michael. We are back. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We've been talking about celebrity feuds. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right here on 720 WGN. So we've got more celebrity feuds here to talk about. How about this one? In 1974... Sylvester Stallone elbowed Richard Gere in the face over a piece of greasy chicken. While filming The Lords of Flatbush, Gere annoyed Stallone by staying in character. Their feud escalated when Gere bit into some chicken and splattered Stallone with mustard, leading to Stallone's elbow shot and Gere's dismissal from the movie. I didn't know that Richard Gere was originally cast in The Lords of Flatbush. I wonder what part he had.
Do a little research.
Yeah.
Chicken.
Well, listen, man, they were starving actors at that time, man.
That's true.
Seriously, they were both completely broke, and nobody knew who they were, so you want your chicken. If they're going to give you some chicken, you want to eat it. I mean, because, you know, Stallone had absolutely no money when he made Rocky. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. And, very smartly, he took points on the movie.
Yeah.
Which, you know...
That rose him.
Yeah.
I gave to him.
Yeah.
I just never would have suspected Richard Gere of such foul play.
But he was probably just a young punk at that time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Richard Gere. Oh, man. All right. Here is Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
All right.
Okay, I got this. Is a big one for you. Despite that, these two guys were very nice. They despised each other for years, even to the day they died. Prince and Michael Jackson.
Yeah, there was an unspoken massive rivalry between the two of them.
Yeah, but they're always trying to see who's a better man, who will come up with a better album. I remember hearing a story that at an award show where Michael Jackson was sitting down, Prince was playing his guitar. He walked up to him while he was singing. He just taunted him with his guitar, and Michael called him a rude, very disrespectful person.
Yeah, okay. Well, I side with Prince on this one. Sorry.
No
All
problem.
Right, Ike. Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm a Prince guy. Way over Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
It's not even in the same league.
And Richard Gere was originally cast as Chico.
Okay, that clears it up for me. 815 area code, David Lee Roth, Sammy Hagar, Eddie Van Halen. I don't know if Sammy Hagar was really in the feud. That feud was between David Lee Roth and basically the rest of Van Halen, but Eddie Van Halen. And Hagar just happened to be the replacement. Oh, this is a good one. 414 area code says, Suzanne Somers, John Ritter, and Joyce DeWitt. Suzanne Somers even had to shoot her scenes from another studio on a telephone. She made so many demands. She became unbearable on that set. Don't listen to this one. 312 area code says, Alf and Toonces the cat hated one another. Yeah. And then Toots drove off a cliff and died. All right, this is a classic one. This is from a legendary movie where both women were nominated for Oscars. The movie won Best Picture. Deborah Winger farted on Shirley MacLaine while filming Terms of Endearment. The two actors' wildly different personalities caused them to clash on the set. MacLaine didn't like Winger's carefree attitude, and Winger exploited that by messing with her constantly. In McLean's memoir, My Lucky Star, she remembered a time they argued about standing in the right spot. Winger replied, "How's this for a mark?" Then she then lifted her skirt slightly, looked over her shoulder, bent over, and farted in my face.
Real professionals.
They hated each other. Oh, my God, they hated each other. How about this? Tyrese Gibson publicly called The Rock selfish for doing his spinoff Hobbs and Shaw at the expense of the 9th Fast and Furious movie. He later walked back the statements he made on social media, blaming them on his medication, but it was too late. The Rock said, "To me, there's no need to have a conversation." That movie looks ridiculous.
I'm so psyched.
Russell Crowe. Oh, here's a shocker. Russell Crowe got into a conflict with somebody?
I wonder if he punched him.
Oh, or threw a phone at him or whatever.
Yeah, whatever he does.
Russell Crowe called George Clooney a sellout and a, quote, Frank Sinatra wannabe. Clooney's response, dude, the only people who succeed when two famous people are fighting is People Magazine. What the F is wrong with you?
Russell Crowe. Oh, yeah, no, he's a real artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was... His voice was fantastic in Les Mis. I couldn't even get through that movie. I mean, I did end up watching the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I had a screener of it. It took me five times. It took me five sittings to just get through it. I hated that movie so much.
I really don't even like the musical all that much, but I think it's because Theater Kids soured it for me.
Yeah, I think I like the musical. I actually like the musical. The stage version of that movie was terrible. That movie was terrible. And Anne Hathaway, who I love, gets an Oscar for that performance. So, like, the next time I get a haircut, I'm going to cry and sing and see if I get an award. Here's a really important one. Slipknot's Corey Taylor versus Nickelback's Chad Kroeger.
The bro down of the century.
The frontmen have exchanged more than a few words over the years. Kroeger called Taylor's band Stone Sour Nickelback Light and referred to Slipknot's masks and stage show as, quote, a gimmick. Taylor responded by telling Kroeger, curl up in bed with your Hello Kitty pillow and shut up. And later added, Chad Kroeger is to rock what KFC is to chicken.
I'm going to go Corey Taylor on this one. That's brutal.
And then Martha Stewart and Gwyneth Paltrow have a bittersweet feud. Ever since Stewart said that Paltrow wouldn't be copying her lifestyle guru if she had been confident in her acting skills, they've been taking swipes at each other with recipe names. Stewart named one of her pies Conscious Coupling, mocking Paltrow's views on divorce. And then Paltrow created the Jailbird Cake, hinting at Stewart's time in prison. So there they are, some memorable celebrity feuds.
If you could describe yourself as one chicken joint, how would you describe yourself?
White Fence Farm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I guess. Or Popeyes. Popeyes is better than KFC, mm-hmm. and I like KFC.
Yeah. I'd probably describe myself as Browns.
Browns.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of them around anymore.
No. Probably because of the lack of flavor.
Browns used to be one at Lawrence and Central. There was one on Broadway and Clark. Or not Broadway and Clark. They were in the same direction. Foster and Broadway. For a long time. So, all right. Well, there you go. That was fun going through some of these stupid celebrity feuds. And they'll continue. As long as there are celebrities, there will be feuds. So there you go. All right, we got a break here. The news is coming up next. And then tomorrow we have our monthly visit with Herb Weisbaum to talk all things consumer. And he's going to help you out to stay away from being scammed and how you can work well with your money. That's all. That'll be coming up tomorrow right here on WGN. All right, the news is coming up right after this.